across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So what I did was I downloaded. I went to the App Store and I put. Well, no, I went to Google and I put in interesting new apps.
All right.
And obviously, loads of stuff came up. The one that I went for, well, I went for a couple, but the one that I stayed with was an algorithmic mini search engine app.
What does that mean?
Right. Okay. You know how search engines work. You can actually. You can kind of download your own mini search engine and you can get it to do whatever you kind of want it to do. So I, having downloaded this thing, I was able to ask it questions such as, what are the most interesting things at the moment in the United Kingdom?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it came, it combined things like most Googled, most tweeted, most Facebooked, most Instagrammed, most other social media, most on news feeds, political current affairs and social media websites and all that sort of thing. And it came up with what it said were the most 20 interesting things in the country at the moment.
Well, who knew it was that easy?
Well, who knew it was that easy? Exactly. You know, why work?
We never need to go out again.
No, no. Journalists, broadcasters, just, you know, there's no work involved now.
No.
So I did it. And, of course, it was 99% the world in general, the country in general.
Right.
1% me.
Oh.
Ah. Yes. So, you know, you've got to be careful about that. But, you know, I'm here to tell you what are the 20 most interesting things in the UK today.
I can't wait.
I know. And also, I put in, just out of interest, things and people who are not as interesting as they think they are. And that was good fun too. In fact, I'll start there if you like. I've got 10. Things that are not as interesting as they think they are or should be. And one at number 5 was... Question Time.
Right, yeah.
That really is not at all interesting. It's the same every week. It's David Dimbleby. It's a Labour politician, a Conservative politician, a Lib Dem, and somebody who's supposed to be interesting.
Mm-hmm. And it's a gentleman in the third row with the blue jumper. He's the most important thing.
And they ask the same sort of questions about the same sort of things, and it's been going on for 20 years. And the best thing about Question Time was when Tracy Ullman on her show doing Jeremy... and she had John there and they were doing Gogglebox and Question Time was coming on and she, as Jeremy, was singing the theme tune to Question Time in the same way that men do Match of the Day.
Ooh.
You know, men go da 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 da, and Jeremy was getting pumped up waiting for Question Time. Not as interesting as they either should be or think they are. Russell Brand. Gone very quiet.
Well, he's married now, isn't he?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Is he?
Yeah.
Does that explain it?
I think it explains quite a lot.
Okay, fair enough. Mountaineering?
Yeah.
Nowhere near as interesting as it thinks it is. Ha! Because every mountain's been climbed. And so what? And there are banana skins at the top of Everest, apparently. Loads of them, apparently. Because people think that banana skins biodegrade. And they do. But it takes about 400 years.
Right. And I'm guessing Everest being thin of air means that everything's a bit slower.
And it's also incongruous, isn't it? You're within 30 feet of the summit of Everest. There's a banana skin.
Outrageous.
You know that has been brought there by some American tourist.
It's also an accident waiting to happen, isn't it?
An accident waiting to happen. If you believe Beano.
No.
Harry Potter, not as interesting as it... thinks
yeah.
it is. MPs in general.
Yeah.
Isn't that true?
We don't like them interesting, though, do we?
Oh, I do.
Okay.
I just wish they were genuinely interesting, more interesting than they are. I mean, Jeremy is interesting, but not in an interesting way. He's interesting with his allotment and his veganism and... Oh, Jeremy Corbyn.
His chant.
Yeah, I actually had to Google that song to find out what it's all about. But I still can't see how it came to be the Labour anthem. Sam, is there any chance we could get that? Is it White Eagles or something? That's
White Stripes.
White Stripes, thank you. Have we heard it in connection with this? It'll take him a moment. What else is not as interesting as it should be or they think they are? Do you know what's number one? On this list anyway, God.
Right, yeah.
God.
I mean, I don't want to tell him that.
But it's a fact, isn't it? They're, he's got no side.
Right, he's and that's no what you angles. Need for interest.
Yeah, he's got no flaws.
What do you think about Old Testament God? He was interesting.
In what way?
He used to get stroppy. Then New Testament, he was a lot calmer. Old Testament God is the one with the, you know, smiting people down and sending floods and getting angry and throwing a strop.
Yeah.
New Testament God is very forgiving.
Now, but is that kind of, you know, tyrannical dictatorialism interesting or just plain terrifying? By the way, good evening. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for Jamie East, who's in for Rufus Hound, who's in for Ian Lee.
Yeah.
Which I'm pleased about is possibly a record.
It's been a revolving door of presenters this week.
And I love it. I love just getting a phone call quite late saying, oh, any chance? Yeah, I'll be there. Sam's found the song that has given the world Oh, Jeremy Corbyn. Oh, yeah. That's quite menacing, though, isn't it, for jazz? Is it a menacing song, Sam?
Yeah, I'd say so.
It's a fight song, isn't it?
Yeah. Fight song?
You're going in, yeah, Seven Nation Army couldn't hold me back. I'm in.
But that's not Jeremy at all, is it? Mm. I mean, the man is so sweet.
You haven't seen him down the allotment, right, when he gets digging.
Well, when he finds...
He finds something...
A caterpillar.
Yeah.
On one of his turnips.
There'll be outrage. I bet he escorts it off the premises.
No,
he doesn't squish him, does he?
No, he'd take it somewhere safe.
Yes.
What else? We're looking at... I've downloaded this app, an algorithm of... Well, you can find out anything you want using it. It's kind of like a casual... Oh, there you are. It's kind of like a casual...
Hello.
Hello.
Where were you?
I thought it was the headphones. I was over the far side of the room, in the broom cupboard. And this app, allegedly, is a kind of a personalised search engine. So I put in... one of the most interesting things in the United Kingdom that people are talking about, and it's given me a list. And they're pretty, yeah, it's pretty close. But I also put in things that are not as interesting as they should be. I've come up with, it came up with death.
Yes, always interesting.
Because it's hugely interesting, but it doesn't come across as interesting. Because we don't know anything about it, and we don't like to talk about it. So... You know, I mean, who's that American comedian, Norm Macdonald? He's funny. And he said, they say that there's nothing certain about death, he said, and that we don't know what happens after death, he said, but we do. He said, we know for sure the first thing that happens after death is that you're found. what have we got? Question time. Harry Potter, Russell, Piers Morgan is interesting. But not as interesting as he thinks he is.
Yeah, I can see that.
So onto a list of things that are interesting in the UK today. And this, my list does not include scandals or atrocities.
Phew, did you eliminate that from your search?
I chose to take them out when they appeared. Because obviously there are things that you just don't want to make light conversation about. Although, you know, and I don't think people go down the pub talking about what's going on in Hollywood or... Or wherever. Do they?
More
really? Do we talk about that?
Maybe not Hollywood, but maybe in relation to, you know, things that they've done in the past. Oh, I wonder whether I should have done that. Was that out of order?
But do we talk about it down the pub? Do we talk about it in the queue for fish and chips? Or over Weetabix in the morning?
Well, certainly not that, though.
No, we don't, really. We hope that somebody else is dealing with it. So, one or two things that didn't quite make the list of the most interesting things in the UK today. Just outside was Strictly Come Dancing, outside the top 20, which surprised me because everybody apart from one or two select folk like me, it seems to be extremely bothered about Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah, my mum is. I'm not.
You're not.
I find it very difficult to commit to television programmes. I can't stay awake long enough most of the time.
Even when you're... broadcasting husband is on one.
I'll watch that just purely for research purposes.
Well, we watched it for an hour before we came on the air just now.
Yeah, but we talked a lot, didn't we?
Yes, but about it.
And about matters arising from it.
Yes.
Well, that's what television's for, isn't it?
Television is for being on in the corner so that you can discuss what he or she looks like. And have your own thoughts about how you would be with them if you were in a room alone with them.
Right.
That's what television does. My goodness me, what's she wearing this morning?
Yes. Who dressed her? What did she come as?
Yes.
That's my mum always cries. But I do feel a bit sorry for those people.
Which people?
The rich people on the television wearing the dresses.
Are they rich?
Probably.
Not really rich. I've got a theory that everybody is worth about a third
of what you reckon.
Everybody thinks they're worth.
Yes, probably.
Really?
Probably.
They're not rich on Strictly, though, are they?
The presenters?
The people who are dancing.
Oh, no.
And we know that Claudia Winkleman is rich.
Yes.
Is that rich? £500,000 a year?
It would be for me, I think. I would feel like I'd made it.
How much would you need to simply stop doing anything and do what you want to do for the rest of your life? How much money would you want? And this conversation does go on between men in pubs.
Yeah.
I don't know if women do it at all.
Yeah.
That conversation.
I've thought about it a lot because people say, oh, £1 million. £1 million isn't enough.
That's the male thing.
Yeah. £1 million isn't enough.
The guy comes in and says, no, £1 million wouldn't get you anything anywhere.
Well, it would. It'd pay my mortgage, put a bit away, live off the interest. Surely that's enough. Assuming I'm happy to live in that same house forever.
Yes, there's that.
Which I probably wouldn't, would I?
I think men tend to go more towards 10 million.
10 million? Gosh, I can't even imagine that amount.
And not even Claudia Winkleman, after tax, will ever be worth 10 million.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it?
Unless she's bought a nice house and, you know, in Notting Hill or whatever. Because there was that guy who used to present Crime Watch. Was it Nick Ross?
Nick Ross, yes.
And he got paid 250 quid per Crime Watch. Like you do, because nobody earns an awful lot of money presenting, I can tell you.
Well, not for the BBC as well.
No. But he bought a house in Notting Hill. And I think he paid about £450,000 for it 17 years ago.
Okay.
And then got an offer from the Russian embassy, this is what I read, for the house about 18 months ago, and they offered him £17 million. Oh, she moves back. The woman moved back in her chair.
I recoiled.
On hearing that news, the same way as I did.
Yeah. Well, the Russians have got money to burn, haven't they? But that's an awful lot of money.
That's another conversation. Hello, it's Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for Jamie East, can I call him Roland?
Rupert
Hound, who's in for Ian Lee, who is in the jungle.
Yes.
And we'll come on to that shortly. And this evening we're discussing the algorithm that I've apped, which tells us the 20 most interesting things in the UK today. You might agree or disagree. What do you find interesting? What's the most interesting thing in the world as far as you, dear listener, are concerned? What is the thing that jumps into your mind first thing in the morning? Actually, that's a good way of looking at it, really, isn't it? What's the first thing that jumps into your mind when you realise that you've woken up after an indifferent night's sleep?
Me?
Yes.
When I can next get back into bed.
Really?
Yeah. Sleep is a big thing for me at the moment. And I also find sleep... Yes. Actually, sleep is fascinating.
Sleep.
How can you have good sleep and bad sleep and it's the same length of time?
Now, there was a report out this week and I got into trouble for saying what I'm about to say. So I'll say it again, obviously.
Oh, good. Thank you. On my watch.
Exactly. Yeah. And it said that women are twice as likely to, unfortunately, tragically, suffer a stillbirth and indeed even more tragic for the child if they go to sleep on their back.
Yes.
Oh, you saw that?
Yes, I did see that.
Well, it just makes people terrified. Mm-hmm. Because
you can't control how you lie.
No, you can't. I can't remember ever in the whole of my life actually going to sleep. One minute I'm lying there wishing I was asleep, and the next minute the alarm's going.
Yep.
I don't remember falling asleep, and I do not remember tossing and turning, apparently between 11 and 13 times on average.
Gosh.
Yes. Some people up to 35 times per night.
I think children more. My
children toss, turn over.
My 6-year-old can revolve completely. You know, she'll be upside down.
Of course. Oh, your God, yes, you come in and they've got their feet going up the wall.
Where is the child?
Yes. Yes. So I felt it was a bad piece of information to get out there, because when we are pregnant, we feel so vulnerable and are so worried that anything that we may do in the 9 months of carrying child might in some way damage or contaminate that child. And yet we still have the odd fag, some people do, and the odd glass of white wine, some people do, and I would say should, but anyway. But the idea that we have to go to sleep on our back, on our side, sorry, and stay on our side...
It's the staying that's the problem.
How can you do that?
It's the staying, isn't it?
What do you do? They said there was some advice like put a pillow next to yourself or against your back so that you can't roll onto it.
Yeah. Well...
And fall asleep on your back.
I think it becomes more difficult to fall asleep on your back when you're very pregnant. Because,
yes,
you know, you get wedged.
Yes.
But I imagine that actually this news will have come to as music to the ears of some manufacturer of some device. Now, I've never been more grumpy than when I went to a baby fair, right, when I was very pregnant. And there were all kinds of things, all inspired to help the mum and dad, but all actually planted that little seed of terror.
Yeah.
Like, here's a helmet for your child because their heads are so soft. Here's a thing that you can suck the end of to get the snot out.
Yes.
Here's, you know, there are devices and devices and devices.
Yes.
You don't need that stuff.
No.
And if you do, you'll know.
Yes.
Don't buy it beforehand.
Being pregnant must be... Well, is it as terrifying as it looks? From the point of view of people who will, not in my generation's lifetime anyway... be able to be pregnant, but I suspect that men will be able to have babies in the not too distant future. But is it as potentially terrifying as it looks?
It's not terrifying. There is a lot of pressure,
responsibility.
There is a lot of you know, the more you hang around people who are talking about babies, the more you realize that you've not got the list right, and you don't know what you're doing, and you've got the right things, and you haven't got them, you know. And it doesn't stop when they're born. I think with the second child, though, I realized that most of that was bull, and actually my way was fine.
Yes.
And I should stop trying to keep up because there's
nothing
to keep up with. 200
million years of evolution.
Yeah.
So equipped us, hasn't it, with certain things that probably ought to kind of more or less do the job.
Exactly.
You're tuned to Talk Radio, or you might be podcasting, in which case, thank you. I hope that you're podcasting for the first time this particular broadcast a year from now, and that Donald Trump hasn't killed off the world. That's worth mentioning, isn't it? It's Talk Radio. You can call us. I'll give you the number after the break and the text details and the tweet details as well, because if you happen to be new to this form of broadcasting, you won't know what those numbers are, and I'll have to do it fairly slowly and tediously if you're going to take them down from off air. But you can get the numbers from the website and also from the app, I believe, which you can download onto your phone. Am I right?
Yes, you can. Yep, yeah, you're correct.
I'm Tommy Boyd, in for blah, 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 blah. And Kath is here as well. And so is Sam. It's 10:20.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
So the numbers, if you're interested, are call 03444991000. I'll say that again in just a second. Text is 87222. Start your text with talk. Or you can tweet us. We are at Talk Radio. Ampersand Talk Radio. Is it ampersand?
Is that an ampersand?
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
The switchboard number again is 03444991000. And Mark's on the line from Tunbridge Wells. Evening, Mark.
Good evening, you're right.
Yeah, you?
Yes, yeah, fine, thank you. Good to hear you on the radio. I heard a thing on Radio 4 earlier saying about how many people have drowned in the Mediterranean this year. You know, never mind how many people have tried to make the crossing. And then I looked up on my tablet on Medicines Some Frontiers, which says, you know, there's just thousands and thousands of people drowning in the Mediterranean, and all the European Union and everyone else is turning a blind eye. And I can't believe I live in a time and a place where we are rammed down our throats every day about how equal and how lovely we are, and yet we're turning a blind eye to people, you know, just like I can't even think of the word, like a Holocaust in the Mediterranean. And if you was to say, which I won't because it would be disgusting, but if you was to say live on air, well, it's only because, and then use a certain old-fashioned word that we used to use here, people would go nuts and say, oh, that's racist. Go, yeah, no, it's racist because they are dying because of what they are, and no one cares. And I just can't believe that if someone says, oh, someone touched my knee, then we'll hang them. But you go, what about those people drowning? Oh, bugger them.
Right. Okay, your heart's in the right place. And,
well, always.
Well, I've only got your word for that. But I'll take it. So, without diverting, your heart's in the right place on this issue, of course. And I think you'll find that 100% of humanity agrees with you.
Yes.
It's the question of what is to be done. There was that old maxim that my mum used to have on a postcard by the telephone, which was something along the lines of change the things that you can change.
Yes.
But learn to live with the things that you can't change. But above all, learn the difference between the two. Learn the difference between the things that you can change, which might be what's going on in your own head, your own life, your own family, your own colleagues, your own street, you know. You can actually affect those things.
Yeah, of course you can.
But things that are happening around the other side of the world, it's really difficult to actually change those enormously. You can put pressure on MPs. Is that going to work? You can write to the United Nations. Is that going to work? So there are certain things that we have to acknowledge are appalling, but also acknowledge that we can't do too much about them. So we mustn't let them get to us too much. Just the right amount.
It just seems, Tommy, that it just seems when I listen to someone like you, I always get it in my head. I always think, what a decent, kind, wholesome person. I wish I could be like someone like that person. Because when I think of the way I grew up, I can't believe I'm still alive. And then I talk to someone like you and think, wow, why can't we have this guy running the country? Because then that kind of thing wouldn't happen. And if someone like me that tries to educate themselves economically, when you actually start looking at the economics, which I think everyday people don't look at, that you say that actually is an economic strategy, that while a chancellor saying, oh, I'm gonna knock off housing thingy so people can have houses, while those people drown trying to get here thinking that, you know, we care. And then I just want to scream and say, I thought we were Great Britain. I thought we were the people that liberated the death camps in World War II. Shouldn't we be going down there en masse and saying that those people shouldn't be coming across the Mediterranean anyway? They should be in safe countries, being happy in their own part of the world. Shouldn't we start actually saying, why don't we start investing in that part of the world, get people growing and making things and spreading the money around so that they can be happy where they are? And then the economy, when they talk about tarmacking over our countryside, because that's, we've run out of options, say, why don't we start sort of going, sort of this inward thing, why don't we economically start saying, let's look back to Africa, start investing in it, let's create a wealth fund and say, let's actually keep those people where they would like to be, let's take away the weapons and start making stuff and investing them. But it doesn't work like that, does it?
Okay, Mark, listen, I'll tell you this, I hope there is something in reincarnation. Because if there is, I think you're an idealistic young soul, and if what those who believe in reincarnation is true, say, is that you generally come back 6 or 7 or 8 times before you eventually don't need to come back any longer and you stay in nirvana. And I hope you do come back, because I do think that the world will kind of get closer to what you would like it to be now, perhaps in a few hundred years' time. I hope so. If we're lucky. Otherwise, you wouldn't have children, would we?
No.
You wouldn't have children if you didn't think that they, you know, the world was going to gradually get a bit better and a bit better and a bit better. And well, I think it does.
And that's that thing about, you said about the limited amount of influence we have on the world. You see things happening all the time and you have to recognise the fact that you can't control that, but you can do something about what's on your doorstep. And I suppose having children is the embodiment of that, isn't it? I'm going to do a better job this time, is what everyone thinks.
I had to have counselling after covering a news story about 20 years ago because I found, what was discovered, was that I blamed myself for not being there to prevent it.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Part of me was saying, why didn't I anticipate that this would happen and get on the train, which would have been about a 4-hour journey, and get there and stop it happening, because it was such a terrible thing. And of course you can't.
No.
But you can care, but you mustn't damage yourself in your caring. That's what I think I would say to Mark. But what a nice man. And thank you for your call, Mark. And our number is 0344 499 1000. This is Talk Radio. You can text us 87... @Treble2. And you can tweet @TalkRadio. Had a nice text in, or tweet rather, from Chuck Thomas, who says, I'm missing Ian Lee on Talk Radio, but loving him on I'm a Celeb, easily the star of this series. Oh, and he does seem to have got the headlines.
Yeah, I think he's the only one that realises it's a game show at this point.
Ah, yes, you're probably right.
But then again, he's fresh, isn't he? They're all a little bit jaded. They've been in there a bit longer.
Have they? So yeah. When he came out with one of the great campaigning lines of all time, when he opened his campaign to be Prime Minister of the Downing Creek, whatever it was, I won't use the full language, but he looked at his electorate and said to them, you look completely...
Fluffed.
Fluffed is what we'll say.
Yes.
And so we didn't vote for him.
That, yeah. Well, that was his inner monologue, and sometimes it seeps out, as you well know.
yeah. We just got to keep shaping Ian Lee into being the superstar broadcaster that is in there somewhere, for sure. Definitely. We've got the 20 most interesting things in the UK on the agenda today. I'll take some more calls, though. I think we've got Gavin in Bishop Stortford, Hertford, on the line. Gavin, thank you for calling 0344 499 1000.
How's it going, Tommy?
At the moment, about 8.5, I think, out of 10.
Well, I'm a decent 7.
Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah, man. I was wondering if you're interested in deconstructing the meaning behind My Old Man's Dustman.
No. Why do you ask, though?
It just popped into my head.
Did it?
Or we could do My Old Man to Follow the Van, but it's sort of... it's a follow-on to My Old Man's a Dustman.
It's got nothing to do with My Old Man's a Dustman.
I believe if you look at it closely, it has.
Well, I don't agree. I mean,
it's
obviously...
about having your home repossessed, isn't it?
No, that's what I initially thought.
Yes, it is.
But I only know the first verse of My Old Man's a Dustman. And I've decoded that. And I've managed to match it up with the first verse of My Old Man Says Follow the Van.
No, so I'm distracted, you see, because... I'll tell you why, because...
Okay.
I will tell you why. I'll tell you why. This is how hard it is to be a broadcaster, right? Not sure if I can... I think I will tell this story,
okay,
Kath, and it's me telling the story. How hard it can be to be a broadcaster. Okay.
Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. Several days after the awful tragedy that was Grenfell... I was working for this radio station and we worked through some of the reportage on that and the issues involved. And I think we covered them with the, you know, proper journalism.
Of course.
Which is a shining skill. And sometimes I try to achieve the best of that profession. And I think I did. But towards the end of the show, somebody rang up and the conversation turned to Lonnie Donegan. And in order to lighten the end of the programme, I started singing My Old Man's a Dustman. Now, hang on, because this is where I got on the train.
Natural reflex.
Yes. What's the harm in that? Except I found myself
Your heart crying out for goodness in the
dark. Wait, you see, this is how you have to be so careful as a broadcaster. And maybe sometimes I'm too careful and sometimes I'm not careful enough. But so I'm now about to sing... at the end of a programme that had been devoted its first 2.5 hours to a terrible tragedy, and the last 10 or 15 minutes, we're going light, and we're deliberately going light, OK?
Of course.
And now I'm singing... Now, you do it, because I hadn't thought about the lyrics before I started singing it. So, Gavin, you know how this song goes. Off you go. Mile...
Man's a dustman, he wears a dustman's hat, he's got good blimey trousers and he lives in a council flat.
Okay, do you see?
I think it's got sort of a maudlin downtone at the end of the first...
No, you don't see, do you?
Well, it's a song of dark despair.
Yeah, but you don't see how, because there are people who listen to the radio just so that they can complain to Ofcom.
Oh, how it could be, yeah.
Go on.
They wouldn't see...
Now, what might they see if they had malice aforethought?
If they were full of aforethought and malice and calculating about it...
That I'd been light about council flats.
Yeah, but you're actually paying a heartfelt tribute to everything.
No, I certainly wasn't. I was just trying to lighten the end of the show. There I was, getting towards the end of a sentence, and
so
I suddenly...
So what brought that to your mind, Tommy?
Because you brought up Lonnie Donegan.
No, what brought, when you did it...
What brought up my mind is that, and any broadcaster...
Your mind.
Any broadcaster who does this kind of broadcasting will tell you that you are always looking towards the end of each sentence just to make sure that it's not going to be the one that's going to get you sacked for the last time. Talk to Ian Lee, talk to Kath, talk to anybody who's ever been involved in this kind of broadcasting. You are always 6.5 seconds away from saying something inadvertently or semi-advertently.
So it's like playing a, I'm sure you're familiar with, like a platform computer game where you're looking ahead of you to see where the next pitfall will be.
I see myself as Blondin, if you know who that was. He was once the world's greatest tightrope walker. I think he was the first first man to tightrope walk across Niagara Falls.
Wasn't that Houdini himself who'd done that?
The job is a little bit like that. If you fall short, then you get no listeners, so you get fired. If you go high, you're tremendously entertaining, and you get fired. So that...
All right, would you like me to leave it there then, Tommy?
Yes.
All right, take it easy, man.
Good for your call. Thank you for your call. He was a good caller, wasn't he?
He was.
Yeah.
He's a good sport.
It's about the size of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
What I just was talking about.
Absolutely.
Then. Yeah.
It will come.
What?
The pitfall. There is always one that you don't see.
Always.
But you're always looking.
Always. Absolutely. Absolutely. But the funny thing is that rather like being a rehabilitated drug addict or a recovering alcoholic or somebody who has bounced back after an awful lot of other tribulations of social life, real life it's called, people seem to like that sort of valour, really. I made mistakes, but I've not learned from them, so...
Here I am again.
Here I am again, and you know, and you might find me interesting because I might make those same mistakes again, and you can say, yes, I was listening. Mm. We're talking about the most interesting things in the United Kingdom today, but we're not discussing scandals or atrocities, as thrown up by this app that I was able to download. It's called AIM, an algorithmic mini search engine. So I put in what are the most interesting things. And it came up with, well, I whittled it down to 20. And at number 20, Kath, is a tie between, and bear in mind there's a bit of me in all of this, tattoos.
Right.
And Tiger Woods.
This is, what, interesting or not interesting?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Things that are interesting. Mm-hmm. And Tiger Woods is interesting.
I think he is.
He's fascinating. He's more interesting than he's happy. But he is interesting, isn't he?
Well, does that go in hand in hand? I think people...
Yes.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, how interesting was Bjorn Borg, if you can remember him?
Well, I remember him being quite the dresser.
Really wasn't. Dresser?
Yeah, didn't he wear a sweatband?
He wore a headband, yes.
Doesn't he make pants?
He was pretty, but yeah. He was not interesting. Stefan Edberg, another tennis player. I don't know why I'm on about tennis, but... Not, sports
I find
people.
That quite a dull sport, if I'm going to be honest.
Was David Beckham interesting as a footballer? No, not
I'm not
really.
The person to ask.
No, fair enough. Fair enough. But Tiger Woods is interesting. And tattoos are interesting.
Right, yeah.
I have a friend who's in broadcasting. He's come up with a brilliant idea. He's going to take it to Radio 4, and I think it will work. He said that everybody who gets... Have you got any tattoos?
No.
Have you got any tattoos, Sam?
No.
No.
That's but unique, actually.
What's
You're
that?
Unique now.
Yes.
Tattoos used to be a sign of, an outward sign to other people that you were different, that you were a rebel.
Mm.
Someone Sam's age now without a tattoo, that's rebellion, isn't it?
In a sense, it is. Very renegade.
Yeah, I do know a lot of people who have them and like are in the process of maybe getting their first one. So, I do seem to be an anomaly.
Anomalous. And you're never going to have a tattoo? Or are you always going to be thinking about having a tattoo?
I have always pondered the idea of getting one. I just don't think I ever will. It interests me, but
no,
not enough to, I think, actually get one.
I admire them for making a decision that they're happy with for the rest of their tattooed life.
Yes.
I couldn't choose something that I'd be happy with forever.
We may have had this conversation before. I have a friend who said that when he was young, free and single and he was going out looking for girls, he would always choose a girl who had a tattoo because she was clearly somebody who was
made a decision.
Prepared to
commit.
Make a decision that she was happy to regret for the rest of her life.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's this guy I know. He's he does a bit of broadcasting, and he's come up with this idea. He says, he said, everybody who gets a tattoo has got a story to tell about their first tattoo, mm-hmm. about why they decided to get it and what they decided to get. And he said that, and that is 3 minutes of Dynamite Radio. And I think, you know, that there could be something in that.
Yeah, you're right.
Certainly be better than the worst. You know what's the worst thing on British radio and now and throughout its distinguished 80-year history?
Go on.
Tweet of the day on Radio 4.
Oh.
Just before radio bursts into life, with Paul on this radio station and elsewhere, on Radio 4, on the back end of Farming Today, a concept that's as ridiculous and antiquated as Woman's Hour, they do this thing that they think is kind of funny. It's their tweet, which is a bird. Have you not heard this?
No.
Okay. Now it's time on Radio 4 for Tweet of Today.
I thought you were being arch. Wait, I thought you were talking about Twitter and 80 years.
Tweet of the day.
Wow.
And today's bird is the lesser-spotted swamp cormorant from Norfolk, and it is going to be discussed by Bill Oddie. And then you hear... And Bill Oddie or somebody comes in and goes, this particular cormorant is one of the most...
Hey, that's a good Bill Oddie.
And it lasts about... Thank you. It lasts about 60 seconds and it's rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. Because the joke is now long dead that Radio 4 listeners don't do Twitter. Maybe they do, maybe they don't. The gag was there for about a week.
Yeah.
But it's been running now for about 3 years.
Gosh.
And it's awful. That's really bad. Tattoos, though, his idea for interviewing people who've had a tattoo, got a tattoo, about how they decided to have their first tattoo, there could be something in that. But I think we're on solid ground with number 20 in the 20 most interesting things in the UK today, a tie between tattoos and Tiger Woods. Is that fair, or does it show a little bit about me that Tiger Woods is on there?
Maybe a smidge, but there's nothing wrong with that.
Okay. Darren is next in South Shields. Darren, thank you for calling 0344-499-1000. We'll talk to you right after these important messages.
Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Just before we go to Darren in South Shields, a tweet from Kiara Robinson, who says, can't sleep, but listening to Tommy Boyd and Flipping Cath.
That's me, yeah.
On Talk Radio, but I have to be up at 4:30 for the Rugby World Cup semi-final. A lot of good sport going on through the night at the minute. We'll come on to that never, because our sister station does it far better than we possibly could. Darren is in South Shields. Thank you for calling, Darren. Hi.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Hello, Cass, by the way.
Hiya, Darren.
Hiya. I called, right, and it's a privilege to talk to you, Tommy, because I've listened to you over the years and the stations which were talk radio, really. But what... Was the question, was the 100 most interesting things?
Mm.
Right, well, I've dropped over a bollock there, right, because the thing is, remember Steve Interesting Davis?
Yes.
Can he not be put in the mixer?
What, as interesting or not interesting?
Well, it depends how you say it with Steve, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Remember the spitting image puppet? It was class.
Yeah.
You know, he's become a club DJ. That's quite interesting. Can you see it? Whipping up the crowd into a frenzy on the dance floor.
I know more than one person who I like, but who can't tell the difference between something that is interesting and something that is simply true.
Mm-hmm.
Just because something is true, it isn't necessarily interesting. So conversations with these people, many of whom, some of whom have a heart of gold, and so I'll stick with it right through.
Yeah.
I'm getting some good relationships with the people who deliver us now from Amazon, because they come almost every day. And so
they know you're in.
Yeah. And some of them know how to be interesting, and some of them simply tell me things that are true. And I have to have the same reaction, whether it's... I've got one guy who's a Liverpool fan who comes around to my house about... twice a week at the moment, with all the Christmas stuff that my wife's stockpiling. And he comes up the gravel and he goes, what about that
then? Oh, what about that then with the old result? I tell you what, I can't stand him. Come on, I'm sure whether he's or not. I don't know, I tell you. But anyway, we need a centre forward.
And he's interesting. It's his performance as much as what he says.
Delivery. Literally.
But, yeah, yeah. But one or two of them will simply tell you that the traffic is a nightmare at the moment.
It's very wet.
On the A23, it's very solid.
It's taxi driver.
And it's true. Yeah, it's true, but it's not interesting. So, yeah. Steve Davis, nice guy.
Steve Interesting Davis.
Steve Interesting Davis, nice guy, but not interesting, no.
That's why he got called that, I think.
What's the thing that... What is the one thing, Darren, apart from... the intruder that is in your kitchen at the moment, assuming that your dog is earning his...
Do you know what's actually happened? The takeaway is at the door.
The takeaway's at the door?
Yeah,
man. Is it? Go on then, go and get it. And leave the phone off the hook. No, leave the phone off the hook and we'll hear you saying thanks. Yeah, we'll listen to you receiving your takeaway.
Don't say sex.
Mate, you've always said bollocks. Don't say sex.
Sex. I said two sex.
I know, I said don't say sex. You can't say sex. You can say bollock, but not...
Right, I wonder what he's having.
Seconds. Hello, miss.
What do you reckon, pizza?
It's got 312.
Nate, you're live on the radio.
What?
Say hello.
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 You speak with Tommy Boy in fitting class. What's the damage?
1590.
Yeah, man.
1590, that's a lot for one person.
Yeah. It's not 50.
One person, is it really? 1590.
Right. How surreal was that? Now.
Did you pay cash?
Of course I paid cash.
Oh. So it was 1590?
Yeah, I gave him 16 quid.
Oh, you tipped him 10 pence?
That'd be interesting.
Tipped him 10 pence? You tipped him 10 pence?
Oh, shit, I thought you said
sex. Don't say shit, you've already said bollock. Yeah. Don't say shit.
Or sex.
Right, so you tipped him 10 pence?
It's just a shortage for seconds.
Look, mate, even if you tipped him £1 10 pence, it's still a tad short by my reckoning.
Tell me, he's probably going to put me windows out.
He'd put your windows in if he's throwing from the outside.
No, well, think it through. If you're a Geordie, it's called put your windows out.
I'm from Wild's End, man. Don't tell me anything about being a Geordie.
Well, Wild's End's the other side of the world.
I am from Heaton, man.
No, well, I put a roof on Heaton, but that's still miles away.
It is, yeah. But you soft southerners in South Shields ought to watch it. What I'm saying... what I'm saying to you is £15.90...
Oh, I thought he said 15.
It's badly... No, we heard him say £15.90. Yeah. He did say...
Well, you did. I got 10 pence.
Was he on a bicycle or a moped or a car?
He was in a car, obviously.
Why obviously? Have Deliveroo not got north of Luton?
It was in a car, yeah.
He was in a car?
He didn't send a pigeon.
It'll come to that.
Quite possibly.
But we're only about 6 months away from drones delivering your takeaway, mate. I'm not joking.
That's
all they say. And that would be quite nice, because I don't like it when the... I have a relative who does Deliveroo, and he occasionally sends me little Instagram pictures of what it's like to do Deliveroo, and there's this really poignant one. He often has to deliver to this house, and when he gets there, it's in the middle of the day, and there's this note on the door, and it just says, "Dear delivery person, please leave the delivery on the step. Thank you."
Oh.
Well, that...
And it's somebody who is a bit like me, who doesn't really want to answer the door to a...
What, an agoraphobic?
No, I just don't like answering the door to somebody who's bringing me food.
And
I don't know why.
You just made me do that live on air. Thanks.
I did. And thank you for doing it.
You're welcome.
Nice to talk to you, Darren. Thanks for your call. Do you get nervous when you've ordered takeaway food and they're coming?
Nah. I'm normally too hungry to think about anything else.
Well, there's so many stressful things about it, aren't there? There's like, you know, do you give them any extra money?
Mm.
Do you tip them?
I tend to do it online.
Yeah, so you've paid before they come. Sorted, but still, you know, supposing you've ordered 20 quid's worth of takeaway.
Yeah.
And you don't know how much they earn. Are they on, you know, sub minimum wage for whatever reason.
We've got a listener, Eben, and he does delivery on his bicycle, bike. Yeah. I mean, that is a job, isn't it? That kid deserves a tenner from everyone.
Well, it keeps them fit. The Deliveroo person I know says that it's great fun because it keeps them fit. And also great fun because they never, ever meet their boss. Can you imagine what bliss that is, never to meet your boss? No offence to any of the executives at Talk Radio or indeed beyond in the wireless group. Thank you for your invitation to the Christmas party. I will be there. Or indeed, you know, Rupert, whoever my boss is at the moment. Wouldn't it be great never to meet your boss so that your boss can never make you feel as though you shouldn't be wearing that T-shirt? Or, you know, why did you let that caller say that?
Yeah, I'm not talking about the boss here, obviously. No. But I've had bosses in the past where think, so I've got to laugh at these jokes, have I?
Yeah.
Or I've got to sit up straight. All that business.
Hmm.
And then you've had the conversation, and then you spend the next 4 hours ruminating on it.
Ruminating is the big thing at the moment. If you go to counselling at the moment, all they will do is want to find out how much you ruminate.
Oh, yeah, I can do it all day long.
Rumination, I think, lies at the heart of the vast majority of the mental health issues that particularly young people are facing today. Having the time to go over and over things in your mind. You wake up and the first thing you think about is what you should have said when somebody said something to you and why they were wrong and what you're going to do to them and how you're going to get your own back and what you're going to do the next time. Round and round and round.
Like a stuck record.
Hamster wheels, we used to call them.
Mm.
This is Talk Radio. We are technically engaged in discussing some of the key issues facing us all in Britain and beyond today in the form of the results that have come up from an algorithmic mini-search engine telling us what are the 20 most interesting things in the UK today. And even though the first hour of the programme is rapidly coming to a happy conclusion, we haven't got beyond the first of them, which is the tie between tattoos and Tiger Woods at number 20. At number 19 on the list, which we will be discussing momentarily, is Doctor Who.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
What are the most interesting things in your life? What is the most interesting thing in your life? What's the one thing that you think of first thing in the morning, perhaps, or dominates your social media activity or your internet activity or your newspaper, radio listening activity? I do now go to the news straight away as soon as I wake up just to make sure that World War III hasn't broken out because of Donald Trump. Are you the same?
It's always a possibility, isn't it? Yeah, absolutely.
Well, he always seems to be somewhere up the news agenda with, you know, slagging off the father of some basketball player because of a shoplifting incident in China, or the guy who allegedly fronted up his campaign's links with Russia, now no longer being using his own lawyers because possibly he has now turned king's evidence, as we'd say in this country, and is ratting.
Yes.
On Trump. Yeah, so it's, you know, interesting. I'm a bit of a news junkie like that. But I have my own things that interest me, and I can't stop being interested in Doctor Who, which is at number 19.
I see, I've not got on that particular jag.
But you can't avoid it, because there's a woman now.
Yeah.
And even before then, they were regenerating, and it went away, and it came back, and was Sylvester McCoy that bad? I mean, does that mean anything to you at all?
I remember Sylvester McCoy, and I remember the that was one of the particular series I did follow where they were stuck in. Do you remember they were stuck in a block of flats with these horrible cannibal people? They're terrifying.
No, I wasn't watching Doctor Who during that era.
No, I was. I think that's the last time I watched it.
Cannibals in blocks of flats.
Mm, yeah.
Okay, that's low budget, isn't it?
It was low budget, but it did the trick for me.
And you hid behind the sofa?
I did.
Okay. Sam, are you at all hooey?
No, I've seen one episode and I did not
Just didn't grab you.
It scared the pants out of me.
What age were you then?
I would have been about 13, 14. Oh. But anything can make me jump and that's the one thing I just can't stand.
Really?
Yeah.
And it was the Weeping Angels episode.
Oh, they are right.
Scary. So that really...
So the deal with them was, if you don't look at them, they move.
Yeah.
So every time you blink, they get closer.
They get closer.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, yeah, didn't like that.
Yeah. Doctor Who is at number 19 in interesting things. And the way this algorithm works, these are things that do interest you to a certain extent, but also because they're constantly coming back onto our radar. And Doctor Who has achieved that magnificently this time round by casting a woman as Doctor Who.
Mm. Jodie Whittaker, isn't it?
Yeah. And from, you know, what we see, and the internet is full of images of how she's going to appear as Doctor Who, it works on so many levels. You know, because it's got to be said that people will like her for a whole range of reasons, which weren't there when it was Tom Baker, John Pertwee and et al.
But they've got progressively more attractive, haven't they? Well, Peter Davidson was probably the turning point.
Keep going.
Well, so he started out as an old man.
All right. So if you had to, and I'm going to ask, I'm going to go straight, because it's 11 o'clock at night. If you were forced by law to make love to one of the Doctor Who's, which would it be?
Tennant.
David Tennant?
Yeah.
Okay.
One of the Doctors Who.
Unfortunately, I can't turn this one back on myself without it opening such a can of worms.
Which one would you most like to resemble? How about that?
In terms of looks or in terms of
the
persona?
Whole thing, the swagger is important,
that's easy,
isn't it?
That's easy. Tom Pertwee. Baker.
Oh,
Tom
Baker.
Absolutely.
Have you read his biography?
No.
Autobiography?
Go on.
It's wonderful.
I'll bet.
You can't help but read it in his voice.
Yes.
It's just wonderful.
Yes. I loved his, Sunday Times colour supplement used to do this thing right at the back called A Life in the Day Of.
Yes.
And it was really boring when it was people like, you know, cabinet ministers. They would always say that they woke at 5:30 and listened to Farming Today with a cup of tea in bed. There. Tom Baker went, and I'll do it in his voice, he went, I wake up and wonder whose sofa this is. I listen to see if anyone else is awake. And I go into their bathroom and have a look in the cabinet to see if there are any pills I can use. Whether there are or aren't, I make my way out into the street looking for somewhere to catch a breakfast. And I thought, yeah.
Wonderful.
That is, he's a complete bohemian, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. And a friend of mine happened across him on a station platform once.
And?
And it was as wonderful as you would hope.
Yes.
My friend went over to him and said, excuse me, sir, I just wanted to say I'm a huge fan and I think you're wonderful. That's all. And he said, oh, are you a student? He said, yes, I am. He rifled about in his pocket, produced a tenner and said, take this, dear boy. You people are so very poor.
Really?
Yes.
What a man. What a man.
Gave him a tenner.
Why can't we have people like that in the House of Commons?
Yeah, wonderful.
So if we were in China, that's how they do it. You don't get elected as an MP in China. You get chosen because you're interesting and you've got something that is...
Is that so?
Yeah. So there's people in... They went, we don't know very much about Brazil. Are there any Chinese people who've lived in Brazil for a long time? And they found one. And they said, can you come back? We want you in Parliament because... We want to know what's going on in Brazil.
Gosh.
And so,
is that a communist thing?
Yeah, very Marxist.
Xi
has told all his ministers they've got to read more Marx. Because everybody thinks that capitalism won, you know.
Mm.
Give it another 10 years. Hey,
yeah.
They're coming. They're Marxist. It's a capitalist Marxist country, but it's Marxist. We're talking about the most interesting things. And at number 19, for most of us, is... Doctor Who. I'm going to take a quick call from Alan and then on to Dennis, who is calling from Dunstable. Alan, good evening.
Evening, Tommy. Evening, Kath.
Hello.
What did you make of the nice accent in the jungle?
Well, we missed half of it, so...
Ian got voted to do the bus tucker trial for tomorrow night.
Oh, blimey. That's because I voted once.
My mum voted 5 times for Ian.
Did she? Did she not like him or does she like him?
Well, she's becoming an Ian Lee fan because I introduced her to him.
Oh.
Back up a bit here. Isn't that corrupt?
No, it's not corrupt, sir. Because she knows I'm ugly phony and every night, but she didn't know what he looked like.
You people, you're the reason why we've got the wrong government voting 5 times.
Well,
it's not allowed.
Prime Minister.
No wonder we've got Brexit on our hands. There are people like you going in and voting over and over again. What did she do? Put on a false moustache the second time? Wear her uncle's hat?
How does she get away with voting five times, Alan?
She voted for the app on the iPhone.
Well, it's still correct. It's still...
It's outrageous.
Yes, it is.
Well, I voted for Jenny McAlpine once, and Ian Four.
Mm.
Oh, I see. Split loyalties.
Well, because Fizz is my favourite character from Coronation Street.
Ian, Alan, I'm going to have to let you go. I hope that ITV's electoral registry is not listening to these stories of alleged corruption.
You better go on the run.
That's a disgrace, isn't it? Leo sent a message using the contact form at http://talkradio.co.uk/contact. So thank you for that. And our next caller is Dennis in Dunstable. Dennis.
Good evening.
Good evening.
What the hell is Ian Lee doing with those 10th-rate losers out in Australia? He's not a 10th-rate loser. What the hell is he doing there?
I'll tell you exactly what he's doing. He's earning vast quantities of cash.
I wouldn't be surprised, but, oh, God, what a letdown. Oh, God. There's not one of that that's worth a penny. And those fellows who are controlling it, well, it wouldn't make me laugh even if both their legs.
They're just being themselves, man.
I know
they're not trying to be anything that they're not. And they bring each and every one of them brings a different dynamic to what is a kaleidoscope of the human condition.
Sorry, it's rubbish.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, it's rubbish.
10th-rate losers, that's all they are.
10th-rate losers, I fully agree with you. Thank you, Dennis, for your call. Steve Hewitt has tweeted, Tommy, who is your co-host, beautiful voice, great show?
Oh. Sam, he's called Sam, and he operates the faders.
I don't think Steve is coming on to Sam.
You never know.
Indeed, you never know.
It's Friday night.
It's 2017, you know, you just don't know. I agree with you.
I could have started a fan club.
You could have done, but your voice went falsetto even when, at the end of the short sentence like that. So I don't think he was...
Some people dig that.
Your voice will get there, Sam. Did you ever see Frasier?
Yes.
When that caller rings up and says what a great voice Roz has got.
No, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
What happens?
Oh, well, and she just goes, oh, no. You know, she...
Oh, really?
That's the one! That's the one! OK, we're talking about the most interesting things in the UK today, as thrown up by an algorithmic mini-search engine app that I downloaded Thursday. So some of them are slightly contaminated with my own interests, obviously and evidently, because we have at number 20, Tattoos and Tiger Woods tied, at number 19, Doctor Who, so they are a bit me-ish.
Mm.
But I think that what's at number 18 will last forever as an interesting thing, and that is UFOs.
Right, yeah.
That's not going to go away, is it?
No, I don't think it is.
Not until we get the first contact,
mm-hmm.
which will happen, won't it?
Surely.
Surely.
I mean, more sure than not.
It's certain, isn't it? It's mathematically certain.
Got to happen. Have you ever seen one?
A UFO? Mm. No, a couple of times I thought I had. I hoped I had, but no. No, you?
I saw a fireball once.
Wow.
And I spoke to Heather Cooper, the astronomer.
Oh, yes.
And she told me that I'd seen a rare... event, but it wasn't a UFO.
Oh.
It was bits of a comet or something. It was amazing. Amazing. Like something from a film. And I came into work and I said, did anyone else see that thing in
the
sky?
What time, day, night was
it? It was in the morning, but very early in the morning, so yes. It would have been about 3:30.
Ah, that's the UFO.
Going along the M1. Yeah. And I saw it. But I was concentrating on the road and I spent a lot of time afterwards thinking, did I see what I thought I saw? Did I? You try and talk yourself out of it. Was it just a reflection?
How long was it in the sky for?
It was there for quite a while. It was quite obvious. It looked like, you know, imagine a comet that you see in films when you... But it was crashing downwards.
It would make that noise if it made any noise.
I'm sure it was making that noise.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was.
In your mind?
I didn't open my car window. I might have heard it. But no, in my mind, it was definitely making a...
Wouldn't it be great when we all have automatic video cameras on our forehead?
Prove everything.
I want that to happen. Because I still won't use my local corner shop because of what the girl said to me when she refused to let me have a parcel that they'd left there because I didn't have any photo ID.
Oh, yes.
So I said, you want me to go home and get myself, my driving licence or a passport or something? It doesn't say anything on the little thing that came through my letterbox. It just says you need some ID and I've brought my banker's card. She said, no, you've got to go. And so I turned to go away and then she went,
all right, then I'll be nice to you. And she gave me the parcel without even looking at any ID.
Oh, I see.
So I complained and said that was wrong, and there was a big fight. And I know that I was right, but when I complained to the chain that owned the corner shop the following day, it was clear that they got their retaliation in first, and I was a difficult customer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, but if I'd had my video camera on my forehead, I want one right where mythical creatures have their third eye, so that everything I see is being permanently recorded, you see, and everything I hear and say is being permanently recorded, because I'm always right.
Right.
Did you know that?
Exactly. Can everyone else have one, or is it just you?
No, I want everyone to have one. I want everyone to walk around like Cyclops. No, he's only got one eye, hasn't he?
Yes. You want...
Three.
Three.
I want the...
You want two for using,
video
one for recording.
Up there. Yeah, just to prove everything. So, yeah, no, I thought I saw... The first UFO I thought I saw was over Staines Reservoir. And it was about dusk time. And I saw a single light. And this is very close to Heathrow, where I used to live when I was a boy. And we knew what planes looked like because they always had blinking lights.
Yes.
They've got a steady light, a white light, and they've got blinking lights to prove that they're aeroplanes. Mm-hmm. This was a single light. And it travelled horizontally across the horizon and then suddenly dropped vertically.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
Like a stone.
And then travelled back the other direction horizontally and then rose vertically at a right angle. And it repeated this manoeuvre several times.
So in a square.
And I was gathering people and saying, look, this is it. They're coming. This can be nothing other than. What it turned out to be was a plane that was doing a logging of the perimeter of the reservoir from a height. And when it was logging the farthest side of the reservoir, it appeared to be low down. And then when it's turned left and suddenly started to come towards us, it appeared to be going up vertically. Because we couldn't see a difference in the size of the light. So that was really disappointing. Because I thought, that is it. Anything that can travel quickly in one direction then suddenly go vertically.
Do you wish you hadn't hung around to find out what it was? You could have had that story forever.
Yeah, actually. Yeah, because I do want to see a UFO. And something else that's on the list, but we'll come to that later. What is it? Number 13 on the list. Are there UFOs? Do you think they've been here already?
Yeah, probably. If they've got the technology, they would, wouldn't they?
They do seem to all have come since around about 1952.
Or what, is that when we started looking for them?
Yeah, that's about the size of it, isn't it? Mm. When we became aware of the idea of space travel.
Because you know there's theories about that. That's the origin of man, actually.
Yes, go on. What's the latest?
And actually, it would make more sense than the monkey thing, wouldn't it?
Well, whilst we're there, I've always thought this. Scientists say that there can't be a God because you can't prove it. And, you know, you can't do experiments which conclude that there is a God. So scientifically, there isn't a God. But if their idea about how life formed on Earth is right, why can't they produce life in a laboratory? Because they still can't. They can't, with everything that we've got, you know, the Hadron Collider, any amount of pneumonia and primeval soup, and they still can't put an electric bolt through it, and it starts reproducing. Can they? See what I'm saying?
Well,
if I had to do one line from any Hollywood movie, if you had to do one line from any Hollywood movie that you've seen, what line would you choose?
What line would I choose?
I'll give you a second to think about it, because I know what mine is. Okay. I'd be Dr. Frankenstein, because I'd like to just go, it's alive! It's alive! That makes me sort of cough.
I always thought the coolest line... Oh, you're right.
I know, I'm coughing.
I mean, that's...
I'm a throat in.
That's, you gave and gave to that performance. That's why you committed.
Thank you. There was one take only, though.
There was a great line in Jackie Brown, which is a not very good Quentin Tarantino film, but I did like her.
She was great.
She was the first proper Tarantino heroine that wasn't...
She was fantastic.
Anyway, I loved her. And there was a bit in it where, I think if I remember rightly, her nemesis comes in a darkened room. The lights go on. She's got the gun and she says, sit your raggedy ass down.
Beautifully done.
Brilliant. She's in control.
Your raggedy ass
down.
Great line. She didn't do much after.
No.
Jackie Brown, and I'd not heard of her before, but she can dine on that, can't she?
It was a very stylish character.
Mm. Sam, have you got a movie, a line from a movie that you would like to deliver? Or were you operating the phones whilst we were talking about that? That's fair enough.
No, I got it. Have you seen the film Phone Booth?
Yes.
I love the line when he cocks his gun.
Yes.
And he says, isn't that great? Whenever you always see in films, the bad guy cocks his gun.
Yeah.
But why didn't he have it cocked? Because that sound is scary.
It's a good movie, isn't it?
Yeah, I love it.
It's an incredible movie, really, because nothing actually happens in it.
No, yeah, and apparently it was filmed in, like, 4 or 5 days because it all just took place.
Well, it's just a phone box.
Yeah.
If that's the movie you're talking about.
Yeah.
Where the guy's in the phone box and he's stuck in the phone box.
Yeah, there's a sniper who's on the phone to him.
Because somebody's got a bead on him.
Yeah.
Do you know the film we mean?
I think I've seen the trailer, but I've never seen the film.
What's our number? It's 0344-499-1000. That's a nice call this evening. Thank you to everybody who's called so far and got through. You can text us on 87222, starting with talk. The tweet feed seems to be going very well. Our address is at Talk Radio. I'm Tommy Boyd, in for so on and so on and so on and so on, and Ian Lee, who is in the jungle. Kath is here with the, according to Twitter's sexy voice, and Sam's voice is pretty good too. He's pressing the buttons like this.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Talking this evening about the most interesting things in the UK today to talk about. And I have this from Julie Prunes, whose tweet, subject we were talking about just before the commercials, a film line from Mummy Dearest. We were asking, what is the one line from the whole of all of the films that you've ever seen that you would most like an opportunity to deliver yourself? And Julie Prune says, from Mummy Dearest, which is that film with, those two actresses, God, names are gone. Tina, fetch me the axe. Joan Collins. No, not Joan Collins. Joan, the other Joan. Those two. Thank you, Julie, for that. And Barry's on the... Kath's just arrived with a cup of tea. Who are the two actresses who were in the film Mummy Dearest?
Oh,
Joan
Crawford.
Thank you, Crawford, and... Betty Davis. Thank you. Tina, fetch me the axe. I don't remember that moment, but Julie Prunes' tweet. Thank you for that. Barry's on the line from Weston-super-Mare. Barry.
Hey, Tommy, nice to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, we've had some nice presenters. Yeah, very lucky. Ian's doing well in the jungle.
He is, yes.
Yeah, just to talk about UFOs, actually, but... you just mentioned about lions. I always thought that was a good one from Cool and Luke.
Yes.
What we have here is a failure to communicate from the governor. You remember that one?
I don't know. Do it as the guy did it.
Well, I can't do the American accent, Tommy. But basically, he was lecturing him. He'd just been brought into the penitentiary.
Yes.
And was playing up a little bit. And he just sort of come out with, what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Talking about American accents, did you ever watch Magnum P.I.?
I didn't, Tommy, no.
Oh, well, fair enough. That's the end of that anecdote.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. So, UFOs, Barry, are you for or against?
very much for them. And like you, I would really love to see one.
Yes.
I've not had that experience. Not at the moment, but I can link up with something that Catherine was talking about.
Yeah.
And 2008, in May... I saw a very large fireball, and what an experience it is when you see them.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, isn't it? You try and find an explanation, but there is none.
Well, I used to have for about 20 years, I had a job working sort of finishing early hours in the morning, you know, so I had to sit out a lot in the garden, do a lot of sky watching. So I saw lots and lots of meteors. But this particular, as I say, it was May 2008, and... You know, you see, meteors are like just 2 seconds, maybe sometimes I'll leave a little bit of a trail. But, you know, it's a massive experience. It was a downward trajectory.
Yep.
And a real sort of like a bulbous head on the front of it. And there's all sorts of colours at the rear end, reds and blues.
Yeah.
And it really does it sort of freaks you out. And I checked with somebody from the Astronomical Society down here in the southwest. I don't know whether it might have been a satellite burning up, and he reckons that what I'd sort of experienced, what I'd seen, was a fireball.
Mm. Mm. When I first saw mine, I thought it was a bit of a plane or something, you know, because that's what it looked like. There was a big, as you say, a sort of something burning at the front, and then a streak behind it. Mm. But yeah, weird things. Weird
but
things.
I'm like you, Tommy. I would absolutely, you know, love to see one, but to be able to know that what I'd seen was totally different from meteors and all the rest of the stuff, you know, that goes on in the sky, you know, the satellites and all the rest of them, which are, you know, are fascinating and interesting. But a UFO, well, I'm sort of 74 now, so maybe I've still got time, Tommy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We never know when they're coming. We never know whether they're going to be friendly or not. But I have this theory, Barry... which is that UFOs do exist, but they're not from other planets. They're from the future.
Mm-hmm.
And what they are is they're charabangs. They are tour buses from the future. They're people, the super rich, from about 1 million years from now, and they're coming back to see their earliest known ancestors. That's why they never make any contact.
Ah.
And that's why they occasionally abduct these morons... who are catfishing in a mud hole in Tennessee, and they get up there like that in a tractor beam. What do they call them, tractor beams, always?
Anyway, doesn't matter.
And they take some DNA.
Oh, the probing?
Yeah, they probe. They put a probe in the hillbilly. And then what they do, you see, is they can then augment the DNA of the super rich person 1 million years from now, so that he or she will stand a better chance of living forever, which will be the goal then. So that is my theory.
You're giving that some serious thought.
Nobody else's theory. Nobody else has written a book on this. This is not Eric von Daniken talking. This is me, T. Boyd, humble, you know, doctor of journalism. Okay.
It's a fascinating one, Tommy.
It is, isn't it?
Can I just ask you a question?
Didn't dwell on it, though, did you?
No.
What do you reckon? I mean, if it was possible to sort of, you know, see an extraterrestrial, if you were approached, how do you think you would handle it? Because, I mean, I've thought this one out. I mean, I think your first initial reaction is to sort of leg it.
Not necessarily. Not if she looked like the woman in Mars Attacks. Do you know what I'm talking about? The one who comes into the boudoir.
No, Tommy.
That one, I'd handle one way.
Right.
Predator, I would handle differently. Yeah. I'd have a different line, a different opening line.
Here's what I wonder. Why are they always humanoid?
Yes.
Why aren't they, you know, why do we assume that they are not tiny?
Two arms, two legs.
They could look like flies.
Or they look like insects, giant insects.
But they could be tiny.
Yeah. That was my favourite ever, what's that?
Twilight Zone.
Twilight Zone. My favourite ever Twilight Zone. There's this guy, and he's in some sort of NASA outpost somewhere. And suddenly the radio crackles, and he starts talking to whoever's on the other end. It turns out that they are a UFO, and they are coming. And he arranges to meet them in a field at the back of this little outpost. And do you know what happens?
No.
It's really good. Somebody's nicked it as a commercial. But what happens is he's not sure that he might be being pranked by students. But he goes out into the field anyway, and he looks up into the sky, and he can't see anything. He goes back in and he says, I thought you were landing, and they said, we've landed. And he goes back out to look for them, and there's nothing in the field. And as he turns to walk back, he treads on them.
Oh.
Because they're about 3/4 of an inch long. Right? So there's the size thing as well, isn't it? They're always about 8 foot. Always about 8 foot tall.
Well, either that or they're like the size of children. But they're always visible.
Yes, they're visible. Except in Predator, of course. It's a good film. Very good film. Very good film. What the heck are you?
Barry, thank you for your call in Western Supermare. We'll race to Rocky, who's calling from High Wycombe in Buckinghamshire, in just a second. But just moving on with our 20 most interesting things in the UK today, according to Amy, the algorithmic mini search engine app, at number 17, which we'll get on to right after we've talked to Rocky, is who killed JFK? Because that's still going on, isn't it? Rocky, thank you for calling. Rocky in High Wycombe?
Is that me?
Well, you're the best person to answer that question, surely.
Yeah, I don't know. Why have you called me Rocky?
Because that's what it says. That's the information that I've been given by the professionals.
OK, not my name, that's fair enough.
What is your real name? What would you like me to call you?
It's Gary, that's my name.
Gary? OK, yeah. I'll call you Gary. You can call me Rocky, because I've always wanted to be called Rocky.
Well, I'll call you Rocky.
Don't say call you. I'll call you Rocky. I'll call you Tommy then, Rocky. Rocky, Tommy. I'm Rocky, all right, mate?
Oh, yeah,
sorry, okay, Gary, okay. Carry on.
Rocky, I used to even listen to you back in the 80s and 90s, so good to have you back on the radio. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Gary.
Right. I've just rung up to say one thing, really.
OK.
What we have here is a failure to communicate.
Beautifully done.
Yeah, that's what I rang up to say, really.
It works in two ways, because it proves that you were listening to the last 10 minutes of the programme.
Yes.
Which I always wonder about, because whenever I phone a phone-in programme, which I always do anonymously, just to see what the process is like.
Yeah.
I'm never listening to the 10 minutes or so before I phoned, because I'm trying to phone.
I was walking down the road to the dentist the other day, and I thought he was going to ask me if I had any sort of medical problems. I do have one, which is called gastroesophageal reflux disease. Then I thought, I wonder what that would sound like if someone from the sort of south of America said it.
Go on, then.
Southern States of America. So gastroesophageal reflux disease is an English accent. If you say it in the Southern American accent, it becomes gastroesophageal reflux disease.
Yeah. Changes everything, doesn't it?
Sounds better. Everything sounds better.
Everything sounds better. I often do that when I'm out shopping. I imagine what it would sound like if I was German.
Yeah, if you're German.
Just to amuse myself in Waitrose.
Yeah.
And the one that I like best, and I sometimes buy more of these than I would do,
yeah,
because it gives me the opportunity to ask for...
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go on.
A schwacht Potaten! Which is a sweet potato.
Yeah. That's good. Or if you...
Could
if
I have
you
to... Schwacht Potaten! Just try saying it, man. It's so... Say it as Himmler would have done. Go on.
But if you're German and you wanted a kebab, how would you say that?
Well, I don't know. Go on, you do it.
No, I can't do it. If you're from the Southern States of America, want a kebab.
Oh, a kebab. You're the Southern States of America. Oh, you're Alabama with us. I'm sorry. I thought, I'm with you. I thought you meant South America. America. Yeah, a kebab.
Yeah, so I want a kebab.
Yeah.
But it wouldn't sound so great if it was German at that time.
I tell you what, who is the name of the guy in the James Bond film? Which side? A secret agent? On whose side? What was he? J.J. Waller, something or other?
Sheriff J. somebody, wasn't
Sheriff J. something or other. Yes, Southern American accent is funny, isn't it?
It's not...
The whole hillbilly thing, really.
We can't say it's funny, but we can say it's authentic.
Oh, it's not racist to take the mickey out of people in Alabama, is it? Is that racist?
It's not. In fact, they're
it's compulsory. Isn't
Alabama's
it?
Quite racist.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. So, therefore, it's non-racist to take the funny out, take the mickey out of...
I believe lots of their family trees are just a straight line.
I've just been doing my family tree, and do you know what? It is so boring.
Mm.
Yeah.
All you do is dates.
Well, you know everybody on it, don't you?
Well, you don't. Going back to 1650.
Oh,
but all you get is that, it's dead easy.
But who do you know at 10 to 5?
Good point. Well made. Right, you're not drinking this evening, are you?
Well, not too much, no.
No, clearly. You could drive, couldn't you, but you're not going to?
My wife's out picking my daughter up at the moment, so...
Thank you for your call.
It's good to have you back, all right?
Gary, lovely to talk to you. What a nice man.
He was just nicely alight, wasn't he?
He was just about... Yes, he was. Yes. Yes. Yes, that's an American friend of mine always talks about autumn, saying, I love your country in this time of year. All the trees light up.
Oh.
And they do if you're looking out for them. They're all different. In the summer, they're all the same. Green. But this time of year, you get the red ones and the yellow ones and the brown ones and the green ones. So the that number 17 in this algorithm's list of the most interesting things that are being talked about or thought about in the UK today, we have Who Killed JFK.
Right.
And that's partly there because of the latest nutcase conspiracy theory. Have you seen this one?
Well, is this coming from the files that we're allowed to see, from the files that we weren't allowed to see before?
No, it's not.
Oh, go on.
The late... I can't hardly bring myself to repeat it. The latest conspiracy theory as to who killed JFK is Jackie Kennedy.
Right.
Shot him.
Yeah.
In the backseat of the car. Mm-hmm. Because one of the frames of the Zapruder film, or some film, shows what appears to be a flash from a reflection of something metallic in her hand just before the fatal shot. And, of course, it's just, you know, it's just a refraction or a little or something.
Mm.
But it's put it back up there on
that she shot
Instagram.
Him. She shot him in front of all those people and no one noticed.
That's right.
Is that right?
That's the theory.
That sounds legit.
I know. So who killed JFK? That's probably always going to be up there, isn't it? It's never going to go away, that one. They're
Do
never
you think
gonna solve
it was it. Oswald?
I think it was Oswald acting alone. He was a nutter. He only got that job in the book depository 6 weeks before the shooting took place. And that was by accident. He was given the job by a friend of his wife's landlady. I nearly said landlady, didn't I?
Landlady.
And it was completely random. And he may have said to somebody, hey, I'm in the book depository and Kennedy's driving past on Tuesday. You know, shall I do something about it? But it was completely random that he was there. And he was clearly a nutcase. Mm. He tried to shoot some American politician several weeks beforehand. It's come out.
But did that make him a prime person to pin it on?
Well, he did it, so he, yes, should be the prime person to pin it on.
No, but if we go into the world that where he didn't do it.
He didn't do it. If he didn't do it, my own theory, my own conspiracy theory. You know JFK used to put it about a lot?
I mean, yes. He rarely put it away.
Right. So what he did was he knocked up some motel barmaid in Alabama, right? And she got Harry Preggers, and her three brothers, who are good old boys, decided that they would get the guy who did this to Jolene, whoever he is. Come on, Jolene. Who is it? Who did this thong to you? We're going to take him out. And she said, oh, the president. And they went, okay.
We're going to fix him.
We stuck our neck out a bit here, but we said we were going to get the guy what done this to Jolene. And so they did.
Yeah.
Because it was a turkey shoot. That's what they said in the film. Oh. That's what Kevin Costner said in the film, didn't he? It's a turkey shoot. Back and to the left. Back and to the left. In our house, we were paying host to a young lady some years ago, and it was in the news. And she came and asked me, she said, you said that everybody knows where they were when he was killed, this guy. And I said, yes, if you were alive at the time. And she said to me, who was this guy, Jeff K?
Oh,
Jeff K. Jeff K.
I'm never going to hear JFK again.
No, you don't. Once you've heard... Jeff what was her K. name? I can't say her name. Yeah, she said, who was this Jeff K?
Beautiful.
Okie dokie. Right, we're looking at the 20 most interesting things in the UK today that's in everybody's mind. And there was something else that we were going to talk about, which... Oh, yes, I'll tell you what it is. Apparently, if the North Koreans do have an intercontinental missile that can reach Los Angeles, it can also reach just to certain parts of Britain.
Oh.
Yes.
We haven't done anything to annoy them, have we?
Yes.
What?
Well, for most of us, it doesn't matter unless you live in Hull.
Across the UK, online and on DAB.
Tommy Boyd. Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
This evening, I'm in for Jamie East, who's in for The Hound Man, who is in for Ian Lee, and that's a world record, so I'm pleased to repeat it. Ian Lee, of course, is lording it in the jungle. Kath is here, sexy voice, according to
Steve
people on Twitter. Speaking of which, Sally Muck has tweeted, flipping Kath, there's a conspiracy that Officer Tippett is the badge man. This is in reference to who killed Jeff Kay. Oswald didn't do it alone. And slat fascists. Oh, I don't know why people give themselves these monikers on Twitter. Alien size. Douglas Adams wrote a great little literary out scene in Hitchhikers. Yeah, plenty of stuff on Hitchhikers about what aliens look like. We've been talking about who killed Jeff Kay. As number 17 on the list of the most interesting things being talked about and thought about in the UK today. But something that jumped into my own mind earlier on, so I did the math on it, is if Pyongyang can fire an intercontinental ballistic missile that would reach Los Angeles, which the Washington Post is saying it's possible that they could, that would mean that parts of the United Kingdom are also within range, but it's the East Coast of the United Kingdom, which is the nearest to North Korea, if you fly shortest distance, which is over Russia and Finland and what have you. And the parts of Britain that are closest to Pyongyang and therefore most vulnerable is that coastline, and in particular Hull. Hull is the nearest point in the United Kingdom to North Korea. Did you know?
Well, no, I do now.
You do now.
I hope they don't do Hull, because
it's a lovely place.
It's the home of one of the finest and weirdest restaurants in the world.
You have happy memories of Hull.
I do. It was fairly recent, so my memories are still quite clear as well. It's a place called Wings. You go in to the entrance hall. You stand behind a rope. You pay before you see the food.
Really?
Yes. It's one price.
Okay, that's cool.
You go in. You have, it's like a huge cruise ship dining room.
Okay.
You get your plate.
Yeah.
You're given a table for a set amount of time.
Ah.
And you fill your boots.
You just eat.
And
that
it's
sounds
got
great. What a great idea.
It's got pasta. It's got pizza. It's got Chinese. It's got Indian. It's got traditional British. It's, you know, so it's got all these different things. You know, it's kind of, it's a bit like takeaway food, but you get to absolutely fill your boots. They also stand over you while you're eating. There are people wandering around, keeping an eye on things.
Making sure that you're not what?
Making sure that this is the big thing you can get chucked out for.
Yes.
You have refillable soft drinks.
Uh-huh.
If you share a glass.
Yes.
With someone.
Yes.
Out!
If you share a glass.
Yeah, so if you get a soft drink and your wife gets a glass of wine.
Yes.
And you've had your lemonade and she says, oh, I fancy a lemonade. And you go and fill it up and give it to her.
Yes,
you're out. You're out. And we were laughing about it in the queue because the rules were explained. And the bloke in front of us turned around and he went, no, don't laugh because it happened to us, didn't it, love? She said, oh, yeah, it did.
That's really.
And he wanted a sip of his lemonade, chucked out.
No, that is really interesting because that forms the spine of one of Larry David's great Curb Your Enthusiasms.
Oh, really?
When they go to a restaurant and some people come back with the salad all you can eat,
mm-hmm.
and somebody's got a huge plate of salad, and then somebody else says, oh, can I have a little bit of your salad? And he gives it to the person who hasn't had any of all the salad you can eat.
Yeah.
And the waiter comes over and throws them out, tries to throw them out.
It must be standard practice in an all-you-can-eat establishment.
Well, they're ahead of us in so many ways when it comes to the service industry in the United States. I can only imagine that that's going to be spread across here. I like the idea of paying first.
Yeah.
Again.
I was a little bit worried about it, you know, before you actually see it. But it was only 15 quid a person.
See, Jerry Seinfeld does a routine about it. He says, the worst thing about when you go eating out is that at the very end, you've eaten out, you've eaten, you've drunk, you've sat around, somebody stubbed out a cigarette in a fried egg, and you're sitting there, and somebody comes up and asks you for money.
Yeah.
And you say to yourself, what? This can't be right. So I think that's a good idea. I would go with that.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, you pay for things in advance, don't you?
Yeah, I guess you pay for things and you're given them. I suppose in a pub, you would pay for your drink before you get to see it.
Yeah, although this French thing is coming in whereby you can start a tab in the pub.
Oh.
And I don't do that anymore because more than once I've forgotten that I've got a tab. Because after six pints, you say, all right, I'll see you next week. We're great. I'll show the taxi coming on. What? I said, see you later, everyone. And then somebody runs out into the street and says, excuse me, sir, that'll be £27.
Yes.
So I don't like the tab thing.
No.
In pubs.
It's a marker, isn't it, when you have to go and pay? At least you know that you've had a drink.
Yeah. And it messes with the round thing as well.
Yes, it does.
Because the round thing is the most male thing that has to be done. At number 16 in the list of the most interesting things that we are thinking about and talking about in the UK today is a sort of a tie, which is kind of interesting in itself, because it's between James Bond and Jeremy Corbyn.
Mm.
And they're about level in terms of how interesting we find them.
Right. I'm guessing you find James Bond interesting for a different reason than me.
I don't find James Bond particularly interesting, but the way they keep changing him, rather like Doctor Who, that keeps my interest going.
Mm. Who's your favourite?
Bond? Mm. Sean Connery, isn't it? Obviously. Isn't it?
Yes, although I did think Daniel Craig was very good.
He is very good. Did you say was? Do you know something I don't?
Oh, well, in the film I saw him in, he was very good.
Yes, he is very good. But of the James Bonds, I would most like to have been Sean Connery.
Mm. He was a bit more roughy-tufty, wasn't he?
And extremely good-looking.
Yes.
And the rest of it.
Yeah.
And also because it's rumoured that Honor Blackman and he had a thing with Goldfinger. And that works for me in so many levels. Mm. So I would have been, yeah.
You like looking for... I've noticed this about you, that when you're watching television, or yes. I imagine watching films,
yes.
you're looking for the subtexts all the time.
Oh, all the time. Casablanca, you see, is a gay movie.
Oh, is it?
Oh, God.
Oh, it's friendship, isn't it?
No, no, no. Rick leaves her in Paris because he prefers men. No, come on,
it was staring me in the face.
It is staring you in the face when you look at it. I mean, what's the last line in the movie? He goes off with the French copper and they walk off into the mist. And what's the last line?
This could be the beginning.
Of a beautiful friendship, Louis. Come on. Africa? He goes to North Africa?
Oh, yes.
What did men used to go to North Africa for on holiday for then?
Kenneth Williams used to love it, didn't he?
Yes. Here endeth comparisons between Kenneth Williams and or Rick. But if you watch... I mean, for example, OK, here's a line. Claude Rains, right, as the French police chief. When Elsa and the, what's his name, the freedom fighter, arrive in Rick's bar, he comes and sits down with them, and they say to him, so tell us about Rick. And he says, I'm sure that if I was a woman, Rick is just the sort of man that I would fall head over heels in love with. That's in the movie.
Wow.
And you're not watching out for it because, you know, they didn't have gays back in 1943.
No, of course, it was a later invention.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got a confession. Well, I own Casablanca, but it's still in the wrapper.
The DVD?
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Casablanca?
No.
Excellent. You see, if I...
I intend to, clearly.
You must.
But never seen it.
If I could invent an app, it would be one that would enable me to delete my memory films.
Yeah.
So that I could watch Groundhog Day again for the first time. Or indeed Casablanca. Or Brief Encounter.
Brief Encounter. What a beautiful film that is.
Now, what's the subtext of that?
The subtext of that is sucking it up and getting on with it.
No.
Oh.
The subtext of Brief Encounter is that the Trevor Howard character is a psychopath.
What?
He's not a doctor at all. Did you think he was a doctor just because he said he was a doctor? You thought the Trevor Howard hero in Brief Encounter, who gets off with, what's her name?
Yes.
The woman who was married to James Bond's creator or something, I don't know, is a doctor just because he says he's a doctor.
Well, yeah.
And he comes out of the hospital twice in the film, but only because he's going there for counselling. He's a nutter. He's a dangerous man.
So at the end, when he goes away...
Yes, he's being put away.
Right. Obviously.
He's being sectioned.
He's been staring me in the face all this time.
But you couldn't spot it, could you? Right. What we need to do is regroup quickly. I don't know how we got on to that, but it was good. Oh, and Jeremy Corbyn is at number 16. We're looking at the 20 most interesting things in the United Kingdom today. And we're also reflecting on the fact that if Kim Jong-un's missiles travel as far as Los Angeles, they could also just about reach Hull, which changes everything, doesn't it?
Mm.
If you stop and think about such an awful possibility.
And we also know he's a terrible aim. So it could happen. You could overshoot.
A terrible aim?
Yeah, his missiles never end up where they're supposed to.
we'll come back to that. What's at number 15, which we'll discuss in just a few seconds' time? Yes, this is more interesting than it sounds, OK? At number 15, most interesting things, Manchester United.
Across the UK, online and on DAB. The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment. For those about to talk, we salute you.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Well, we've got two kettles on the boil. One is the 20 most interesting things for most people in the United Kingdom as of today, as thrown up by a random algorithmic mini search engine app that you can get, which I've done. And also the fact that if Pyongyang can now reach Los Angeles with their missiles, which the Washington Post today was reporting, it means that Hull in the United Kingdom and a few other places along the East Coast are also within range. So we're discussing these two slightly disparate topics. We've got to number 15 in the most interesting things, according to this algorithm, generally speaking. And at number 15, it's Manchester United, Kath, which you probably don't give a hoot about.
Well, I'm Manchester United by birth,
but
I have no interest really at all in football, but I kind of, it's been... It's been pushed into my impressionable
mind. But they're more than
mind.
Football, you see. This is the point. It's more than football.
It's a ritual.
Busby Babes, the tragedy of Munich.
Yeah.
You've got David Beckham, who transcends football. He's a brand. We all know about that.
Yeah.
And Victoria.
Well, there was Cantona.
Cantona? Mm. Cantona.
Brian Robson.
What a man.
Yeah.
Cantona is still a human being, isn't he?
My dad used to always point out that Cantona used to run like a soldier, very, very upright.
Yes. What was that film, Discovering Eric, made by him, the great British filmmaker, Ken Loach? And what they did was, the whole point of the film was that Eric Cantona, have you seen the film?
No.
Meeting Eric?
Finding Eric.
Finding Eric, thank you. Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Isn't he like an imaginary friend for most of it or something?
Yeah, well, what it is this guy is being downtrodden at work, he's a postman or something, and Eric's his hero. And he keeps sort of praying to Eric and asking Eric what Eric would do. And what Ken Loach did to him in the movie, the actor did it for real, was he'd hired Eric Cantona to be in the movie, but he didn't tell anybody else.
Oh, how wonderful.
So, allegedly, what they did was they put Eric Cantona, dressed in his Manchester United kit, into the wardrobe, right? And then they brought the actor from his makeup caravan in. And they said, OK, what we want you to do is carry on saying, where are you, Eric, when I need you? So the actors, he launches into this thing, as his script said, you know, say, Eric, what would you do? Eric, I wish you were here. Eric, I need you to advise me. The wardrobe opens and it's a great shot. And if it's a true story, and I hope it is, it worked. The guy just is completely and utterly stupefied. Because they're standing in his wardrobe, is Eric Cantona. Isn't that great?
Wonderful.
Mike Lee, the film director, used to do a lot of that, didn't he?
Presenting them with a surprise.
Presenting the actors with something that they then have to ad-lib their way out of.
Yeah.
There's that one where that woman she's lost her key and she doesn't know what to do to get in the front door, the old lady. And the way he did that was by simply getting props to take the key. She thought she was going to let herself into her front door.
Right.
And what props were told to do was take her key out of the coat so that then she goes back with her shopping and goes up to her front door and she hasn't got a key. And so everything she does is real.
God.
What do you do when you've got to your front door and you haven't got your key? What do you do?
Mm.
So she's not acting anymore.
She's actually trying to find the key.
She's actually trying to work out what to do next.
How wonderful.
So, Eric Cantona, we're talking about Manchester United. George Best.
I mean, there's an interesting
one. You can't get more interesting than Eric Cantona and George Best. Surely. And now Jose Mourinho, who's almost as interesting as Cantona and Best, is
very cool,
running the show. He's a fantastic guy, isn't he?
Mm.
Some lovely stories about some of the mischief that he gets up to. Police came round because he had some dogs in his house in Chelsea. So he hid them in his wife's knicker drawer.
OK, it's probably quite a big knicker drawer. I'm not saying the knickers are big.
Well, they were small dogs.
OK.
So both things are probably true. And hiding in a wicker basket one time when he was banned from being in the... He was banned from the touchline.
Oh, yes, he was, wasn't he?
Yes.
throwing his weight around.
Yeah, that's right. So the rumour was that he hid in the laundry basket. Stuff like that. And, you know, he's an interesting guy.
Yes.
And he's got this guy called Ibrahimovic, who plays for Manchester United now. So they're always interesting, Manchester United.
The kit man's been there for years as well. He's got all the stories, hasn't he?
He's got some stories, and some of them he can tell.
Yes.
And most of them he can't. But Zlatan is fantastic. I mean, he's godlike, isn't he? This
I don't know. Now
Swedish guy called Zlatan Ibrahimovic. But anyway, those things are both true. And he got married, and they said, "What did your wife give you?" And he said, "She gave me as a wedding present a Ferrari."
Oh wow!
And they said, "And what did you give her as a wedding present?" And he went, "She got Zlatan."
Oh,
which is, I know it's creepy, cruelly, but true. At number 14 in the things that we find most interesting at this moment in time in the United Kingdom. Where's the list? Number 14. Bear with, as the lady says it. Hair.
The musical or?
Everything about hair.
Yes.
We do look at our hair, 10 times a day?
Mm-hmm. And it's dead.
Dead, alive, greasy, heat damaged, I mean, what can men buy now? I went to buy some Brill cream.
Right.
Because that's the only one I know. And I saw wax, I saw glue, I saw clay.
Mud.
I saw flexi gel. Mud.
Yeah.
What?
Pomade.
I didn't see that, thank God. I was in Waitrose. Oh. I wouldn't sell pomade in Waitrose, would they? Do you know what they do sell in Waitrose? They sell shampoo for hungover hair.
Do they?
I don't. I'm so sorely tempted to try it.
Gosh.
Because you can have hangover hair, if it's what I think it is. Mm. But my point is that hair is the 14th most interesting thing in our minds in the UK today. Because we, especially if you're losing it.
Yes. I saw some pictures of a young man who's, one of these reality TV stars. And he's had a hair transplant.
Oh, dear.
Also a beard transplant.
Oh, no.
So the side of his face looked really sore. As did the front, in front of his hairline, about an inch.
Where did they get the hair from for his beard?
I think they harvest it from other places, don't they?
Harvest it?
Yes.
Harvest it?
They harvest it.
That is such a misdirecting term for it.
I know.
But we know what we're thinking about here, don't we?
Yeah, they can't use that. It would be obvious.
Would it grow?
Texture's different.
Would it grow there? Would it grow there? Because some men are hairier than others.
Mm. Some women are hairier than others.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I only know if my Gillette three-blade razor has been used on leg, if my wife forgets to put it back where I keep it, in exactly the spot I know where it is.
I remember the howls coming from the bathroom when my dad would discover that we'd borrowed his.
Ah! Yeah.
He'd come out with his little bits of toilet paper stuck to his face.
Yeah, you can tell. Are you a wet shave or a dry shave, Sam?
Dry, he's electric.
You electric?
Yeah. Oh, do you? Because I know people have trouble with those, and I've bought them in the past for boyfriends and my husband, and neither have been used. It snags, doesn't it?
Electric, I can't be doing with it.
Never had an issue, and at this point, I'm now scared to not use it.
I'm glad you said that, because I didn't want to say it first, but I think basically a lot of men are afraid of a razor.
Yeah, I no.
You don't want to have that razor near you. No.
Your face. Nope.
No. I've always wanted to shave with a cutthroat razor.
It's meant to be a wonderful experience, that whole Turkish barber thing.
Going up, yeah.
You have to trust someone, though, don't you?
Well, I've got a couple of cutthroat razors my granddad bequeathed me.
But you wouldn't do yourself?
I've got them out and I've looked at it and I've thought about it from time to time, but going against the grain with a...
I remember my granddad doing it and you could hear the scratchy.
My granddad said that as he got very old, he said, all these years, all these decades, he said, and my one probable regret, he said, that is I never had a decent shave ever, once. Because that's all there was then, was those cutthroat razors. Hair at number 14. At number 13, in the list of the most interesting things that will never go away and they're always slightly out there. I'm not sure about this, but it's the Loch Ness Monster.
Mm.
And that is interesting, isn't it?
It is, but I think it's probably not true, is it? I don't believe in that.
No, I don't.
But it's a lovely idea.
Yeah. But what's really interesting is how it took off. And this is 50 years before social media. And yet there was this idea, it just sort of gathered moss, didn't it? That there was something in Loch Ness.
And all the photos ended up looking similar.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And there were people who used to camp there, didn't there? There was the Loch Ness Phenomenon Investigation Bureau, as I remember it.
Is that what it was called?
I tried to join it. I was interested when I was 14. I wanted to go up there with a tent and a telescope. You know. So that one works.
Mm.
That's number 13. At number 12, we have... Sorry, this has come out in an algorithmic form, you see. So it's... Ah! at number 12, somebody who is also on the list of people who are not as interesting as they should be or think they are is also on the list of the most interesting things or people in the UK today, and that is Piers Morgan.
I don't really get Piers Morgan.
He's on the interesting list, but he's also on the list of people who are not as interesting as they think they are.
Ah, right, OK, you can be both, can't you?
That's interesting in itself.
Yes.
Yes. He's interesting. He's interesting things have happened to him.
Mm.
You know, the photographs that got him fired from the Mirror, being the new American talk show host.
Yeah.
Hot shot.
Yeah,
and, not.
And he is one of the very few people who've managed to straddle that thing of being an irritant without being a stirrer. You know, there's this kind of phenomenon at the moment of people who would just come on to spout hateful things to get a rise, and
yes,
you don't really believe that they mean it.
Yes, he's not.
No, I think he means what he says, and I don't think he's a spiteful person. I just think he's straightforward in his own mind.
You're never up early enough to watch him crossing swords with Susanna Reid on that GMTV programme.
No.
No.
Do you think he's spiteful?
No, I think there's something a bit old-fashioned about the way in which he thinks that women shouldn't necessarily have to finish their sentences.
Yeah.
That's all. I do think that. But it's interesting watching the dynamic. Do you know what? If they come... You know, like... what will they think of us in 20 years' time? When they look back on the year 2017 and the early 21st century, what will they think of us? What will they think that we got really badly, stupidly wrong and couldn't we see it? And I think that animal welfare is one thing that they'll probably think we were quite barbaric about.
Mm.
You know, the battery chickens and all the rest of it. And I think they'll be right. But do you know what else I think? They'll look at us and they'll look at people on television and they'll see... They'll get snippets of GMTV, say, in the morning, and they'll see Piers Morgan sitting there with a collar and a shirt and a tie and a jacket. So all you can see of him is, like, from his chin up. And to the left of him and to the right of him are women.
Mm-hmm.
And the women have got as much of themselves as bare as possible at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Legs are a big thing, aren't they?
And they'll look at it and they'll go... There used to be that enormous distinction between how women were supposed to appear in public and in entertainment and men.
Mm.
And it won't happen anymore. And there won't be programmes like Strictly Come Dancing because they'll be seen as slightly not appropriate with all that bare flesh.
Oh, you think we're going to go the other way?
Yeah. It's definite. It's happening.
I do wonder, you know, now we see every part virtually of every body,
especially
in pop music, female body, I mean.
Yeah,
actually, I remember watching Top of the Pops. I think it was last Christmas. There was an artist on there called Christina and the Queens. And the reason why she stood out was because she was fully clothed. She was wearing trousers, quite mannish trousers, and flat shoes.
Yep.
And she looked great.
Yeah.
And she looked distinctive.
Yeah.
And we couldn't see her gusset.
Do you want to see Piers Morgan's upper arms at 6 o'clock in the morning?
No, but there's another thing, isn't there? Because the male anchor is generally a generation older than the female.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So they're not there for the same reason, are they?
No, but over on BBC, that's not quite true. But you still get bare-crossed legs from the female presenter.
Yes.
And a dress cut down to... Not you know, there's not so much flesh there. But broadly speaking... On television and elsewhere, but primarily on television, women are expected to, required to, or feel they ought to show as much of their skin as they can get away with without looking raunchy.
Mm. Yeah, while still looking professional.
Yeah. But there's no great requirement on the men. Men can try and look sexy if they want to. There's a weatherman on ITV who thinks he's the bee's knees.
Oh.
Oh, is he?
No, I was thinking of Thomas Schaffernacker. He's rather attractive, isn't he?
Do women look at the male weather forecasters in the same way that men look at the female weather forecasters?
Come on, our eyes aren't painted on, Tommy.
I don't know. I didn't know. I'm just asking out of interest.
I mean, for the most part, there's not an awful lot to note, is there?
So just like most men, you don't actually listen to the weather forecast. You're just wondering about Thomas Schaffernacker.
I know about Thomas Schaffernacker. I'm not his flavour.
Why not?
Because I'm not a man.
Is that official?
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind. I'm just distracted then as to why you should find yourself drawn to him. Is it partly because you know that he would not be drawn to you?
I can look. No, just you just notice that that's a particularly attractive person.
Are gay men as fascinating to women as gay women are to men?
No. Oh. But I don't think men... I think men like a certain kind of gay woman.
They like a certain kind of gay... They're interested in a certain kind of gay woman more than another kind of gay woman, yes. But there's a sliding scale on it. And there's no aspect of it that most men find totally uninteresting.
Oh, really? Yeah. The mechanics of it is at the core, is it?
I think so. It formed the cornerstone of one of the great American broadcasters, Howard Stern.
Right.
The whole notion of it. And, you know, it caught everybody's interest. And I think touched a chord with everybody as well.
Mm.
It's that sort of time of night when we can talk about things like this with a reasonable amount of adultness. I always think it's a shame there's no watershed in the radio, on radio. Because there's a watershed on television, it's almost compulsory to say the F word at 9:02. But there's no point on the radio where you can, even if it's appropriate, say the F word.
Well,
I think that's wrong.
You say that, but Radio 4 quite often have, during their plays, they'll have some swears, won't they?
Oh, right. So you can say if it's a play.
Yeah, I think if it's in the realms of imagination, there seems to be some sort of get-out clause.
I have said it once on the radio, and it was absolutely fine. We were having a discussion about language, and I said, on this wavelength, well, on this radio station, it was a while ago, I said, I don't see why a word like the F word cannot be used to mean very, 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 extremely, because it can. And I said, and if anybody asked me whether the birth of my first son was wonderful, I would tell them that it was expletive wonderful. And I said it on the air. I'm not going to say it again now because the context is slightly different.
Yes.
But it was absolutely fine. At least nobody complained. Or those who sit listening to the radio with notepads, and there are about six of them that I know.
Yes.
Weren't actually listening, or else went, no, he can't have said that.
No, he couldn't possibly have said that.
The switchboard's open, but hey, look, I don't want to drag you out of the chair. You're probably, or bed even, you're probably quite relaxed listening to this, but I will remind you that the number is 0344 499 1000, 0344 499 1000. Kathy's here.
Yes.
Sam is pressing the buttons, and I'm Tommy Boyd in for etc., etc., etc. But mainly it is Ian Lee who is out pulling up trees in the jungle.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Kath and I were discussing all sorts of things whilst we were listening to those important commercial messages, and we urge you to take interest in those.
We were.
Products and consider actually making investments where appropriate to you. But I'm not leading you or, you know, supporting any of the ventures necessarily, because I make a point of not listening to the commercials. Otherwise, that would somehow contaminate my broadcasting afterwards. In fact, as far as I am concerned, as indeed are all commercial broadcasters, commercial breaks do not take place. It is a void. We switch ourselves off. We unplug ourselves. And we sit hovering in a state of mental neutrality, making this noise whilst the commercials are going out. Isn't that right?
That's so true.
Isn't it true? The most interesting things that are going on and in our minds at the moment in this country are, allegedly, and I've got the top 20 in front of me, which has formed the backbone of this evening's show, and we're up to, we've gone to Manchester United, so we are on to number 14, which is, oh, hair, we've done hair. So the Loch Ness Monster, we've done that. Piers Morgan, we've done that. So we're on to number 11 now. I wish I'd drawn this out as a proper list. Ah, at number 11 in the list of things that are interesting to a significant number of people and always will be, and we can tell straight away who these people are, is the SAS, war and sharks.
Oh, yeah. I've got a friend who's in the SAS. He's by far one of the most interesting people I know.
Really? Truly?
Yes, because he is not the sort of person that is depicted in the films. He's not... You imagine, if you watch a lot of television, that the SAS all look like Ross Kemp.
Yes.
They don't.
No.
They don't. They look like Bear Grylls.
He's on the list.
Yes.
I think of people who's less interesting than he thinks he is. But anyway.
He's the exception to the rule. Although, I noticed something very interesting about Bear Grylls the other day when I was in Brighton.
Right.
He's the face of the Alpha course.
No idea what you're talking
You know
about.
The Christian kind of introductory course you can go on in churches, trying to get people into the fold?
No.
Yeah, well, they
Keep
do
going.
These
no,
things.
No, tell me
they
more.
Do kind of night school classes.
Right.
You can sign up to. Yeah. If you're thinking about finding Jesus. And Bear Grylls is the face of it. Something like, you know, this is my by far my greatest adventure or something.
So he's found Jesus?
Yeah, apparently so.
Which is the alphabet? Is it
Alpha.
The Alpha Jesus? Or the search for Jesus involves Alpha
Well, you know,
behavior.
Alpha and Omega.
Yeah. No.
Oh, right. Well, the whole thing... well, there's a lot of... Alpha and Omega are the first and last letters in the Greek alphabet, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Let's assume Zeta doesn't exist anymore.
Yes.
But anyway.
Anyway, so there's something in it about I am the Alpha and the Omega. I'm the first and the last.
Okay.
Which is God.
All right. It's funny how sometimes when you learn something, which I just have, you know less than you did before.
Yeah, I know. Sorry about that.
No. I'm not
in
no way decrying your explanation of it. But I sense that you think it's a load of... And he said, crap. Then.
No, well, I was kind of brought up Church of England.
And so you don't really want to sound as though you're pushing this, what some people would consider to be a full-size fruitcake thing.
Well, I've lost my way in their eyes. Well, I was brought up Church of England, but it was really a very kind of just be polite to each other and don't, you know, don't try not to annoy people.
Yeah.
And go to fetes was my Christian upbringing. I went to a Church of England school for the first 10 years. And then I went, moved down south and people are a lot more secular. And then gradually life has kind of drummed God out of my life.
Yes.
And now I do think it's a nice story and I'd like to believe it was true, but I don't really anymore. But a friend of mine is a born again Christian and I love him to bits. And at one point he said, oh, would you like to come along to a thing I'm organising? It's just a course thing, you know, it's just we do like a Bible read thing and I just wanted to see what you think of it. And I went and I gradually realised that it wasn't just a come along thing. It was we think we can save you. And bless him for trying. But when they got onto the devil being a real thing,
right,
they lost me.
Yes.
Because I just don't believe in it.
Devil?
I don't believe in, no. I don't believe in the devil. Do you?
No. But I believe in evil.
Mm.
I used to believe that anybody who was rotten because of rotten things that happened to them.
Yeah.
But I've since come to believe that there is such a level of rottenness that it can only be pure rotten. And that's evil. And evil is only one consonant away from the devil.
Mm.
So maybe I do. I don't know.
You don't believe in a red monster, though?
I'm very happy being an agnostic, somebody who believes that they're not clever enough to know one way or the other about whether there's a God, whether there's a devil, whether Islam is better than Judaism, is better than Buddhism, is better than Christianity. And if it is Christianity, is it Protestant or Catholic? And it is Protestant, is it third denomination, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I just get on
and
do things that I think are broadly right and good.
I think so.
Where possible.
Yeah. I think they're all decent guesses.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. A question I'm going to ask you, and I'm asking you, listener, since we've got there in the conversation, this is the great thing about conversation, you end up in places that you never thought you would. It's like every conversation is almost like you know, like going on a blinded treasure hunt. I'm going to ask you this question and I'm not going to ask you to answer it, and I'm going to ask you, Kath and Sam, and I'm going to ask it to myself as well. What's the most evil thing you've ever done? I'm not asking you to answer it. Don't. Nor you, dear listener. Don't answer it out loud. It's a bloody good question to ask. Leaving a meaningful silence. And we're back in the room with, at number 10 in the most interesting things, food. Yes. Food. It's on Maslow's hierarchy of needs, isn't it? It's at the bottom there. It's boom. The thing you need most of all after air and water, food. But right at the very top of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it provides us with all the emotional reward. You know, that's why we watch so many cookery programmes, don't we? Can you just watch cookery programmes, turn on the telly?
Yes.
There's nothing better you'll watch, Jamie?
Yeah, I will. I quite like the artistry of it.
Yes.
I like to see people doing things I can't.
Well, it takes in such a huge spectrum of activity that takes place on television, doesn't
it? It's like crafts, things with their hands. You know, I love watching people paint or sculpt.
I can't get past Joan Bakewell, though, on the Landscape Artist of the Year.
Why?
If that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, why?
What's the other one as well? It's Joan Bakewell and Frank Skinner.
Mm.
And it's also that woman who killed Victor in... I do not believe it.
One Foot in the Grave?
Yes.
Margaret? Is it Margaret?
No, that's his wife, isn't it?
Who killed Victor?
Yes, the woman who killed Victor in the final episode ever of One Foot in the Grave was Hannah Gordon.
Oh.
Who is the presenter of Landscape Artist of the Year.
Yeah, she's terribly softly spoken, isn't she, Hannah Gordon?
That's just lovely, just absolutely lovely. That was why the writer said I really wanted her to be the person who kills Victor Meldrew. But I can't get past them as the presenters, really.
No.
But food programmes, I can watch them until the cows come home because I love shouting at the presenter.
Mm.
Shut up. Oh, for God's sake. Oh, you think you're so clever.
Which one did you like the most?
Most?
Mm.
Well, there's only one. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Keith. Keith Floyd.
Keith Floyd.
He's the only great television presenter there's ever been.
He's been a terrible influence on me.
Why?
Because I do find that I go a bit Keith Floyd-y when I'm doing the Sunday lunch. I do spend a lot of time in there with a bottle of wine.
Bottle of wine, fantastic.
And I think to myself, well, it was fine for Keith Floyd. Oh, hang on a minute, it was Keith Floyd.
Keith Floyd. We took some kids down to Lyme Regis for some fossil hunting a few weeks ago. And I booked us into this little restaurant in town. I didn't know it until I got there, but it was the restaurant where Keith Floyd had his famous last meal.
Oh.
And I'm sat there. I felt like I'd gone to Mecca, you know, I'd done a pilgrimage somehow. Unfortunately, I couldn't have the meal that was his last meal, it didn't kill him, of course, but, you know, the final meal that he had, because they didn't do it anymore.
Why, out of respect?
Well, I think the menu had moved on.
Yeah, seasons.
And perhaps they got fed up with people coming in and saying, can I have Keith Floyd's famous last meal?
Yeah.
But, no, he's good. The rest of them just annoy me slightly in one way or another, especially Rick Stein, but I'm going to go on about that.
Why, because of the Devon thing?
No, it's Keith, poor old Rick thinks he's clever and he thinks it's a travelogue and it's not. It's just about cooking, Rick.
It's just a bit of dinner.
Yeah. He said, was it one thing that amused me? He said, I find that some of these posh new restaurants, they have so many things in each dish. And I'm reminded of the man who said about Mozart, too many notes. Well, the point of that remark was that the man who said that Mozart had too many notes in his music
was an idiot
man that was Mozart's lifelong enemy and indeed may have had him murdered.
Yes, Salieri.
And he was the villain of the piece because he couldn't appreciate Mozart's music.
But he was jealous.
Jealous of the music. So here's, though, Rick Stein, who doesn't understand that about that simple story, holding it up as being an ally of his against restaurants that have too many fancy sauces and things. And there's an argument against fancy sauces, but...
I don't get the skid mark thing that everyone's doing at the moment. Well, they don't give you a load of sauce. They do a skid mark and then they balance your meat on top, don't they?
Yes, they do. What I've noticed... Have you ever watched Come Dine With Me?
Yes. My kids are obsessed with that film.
Really?
That thing. Yeah, they sometimes give me marks. They do. They do. And I'm pretty sure...
I brought my cough back.
Pretty sure they go upstairs with their shoes on my bed and slap me off as well.
Do they ask to get a taxi round the block then?
They do.
They go... what was it? Mum tried really hard with the fish fingers.
But the entertainment was
awful. So tonight I'm going to give Mum seven.
Yes.
That's brilliant.
They're obsessed with those films, those programmes.
Brilliant.
They also love The Bake Off. So much so that I once saw my daughter when she was five at a school, at a party, pick up a piece of pizza, turn it over and tap its bottom.
No.
To see if it was baked properly.
Check it out.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. I love the idea of you being... living in a come dine with me home. But what I notice is that I think the people who, the members of the public who cook for their guests are just helped a little bit by the production team. Otherwise, everybody would do, you know, the same recipes.
Spaghetti bolognese, wouldn't it?
Spag bol every time or whatever. but I also notice that some of the presentation gets a flourish of sauce.
Yeah.
In, as you quite rightly say, that sort of Egon Rone five-star way.
Yes.
That some guy who is a, no offence, you know, a second-hand car salesman in Ramsgate, he probably does not decorate those plates like that ever.
Yeah.
But they give it that little touch.
It's special. Special posh night.
We're talking about the most interesting things in the United Kingdom today, according to a slightly sort of off-the-wall algorithmic mini-search engine app called Amy. And we've got to number... Where was it? What was the last one? Food, wasn't it? Number 10. So we're doing it in the Top of the Pops way, time on a counting down. Number 9 is reality TV, which you'd expect it to be there, wouldn't you? It's not my thing, but it appears to be very big with an awful lot of people. And I know if I was a kid, I would be using it to find out what adults are really like.
Yeah, I found out through Oprah.
You found out?
About adults and relationships and things like that. Oprah,
she's great, isn't she?
She was great.
She still is, isn't she?
Yeah, but those programmes, those shows she did that spawned, you know, I mean, unfortunately, Jeremy Kyle in the end. But those shows were great. Because they were a slice of life, and I don't think they were as exploitative. I think she was genuinely trying to help people.
Yeah, she was. She is. Yeah, she's a great woman. Great person. Jeremy Carr's done very well for a mid-morning DJ on Radio Luton, or wherever it was.
Mm-hmm.
No offence to Luton. The only thing I know about Oprah, which tickles me, is that that's not her real name. She's not Oprah. She was actually christened Opera.
Oh.
Because her mum liked the notion of opera. But she kind of got stuck at school because nobody could pronounce it or got it, and they just called her Opera. Wow. So she went with Opera. That's what I heard.
I know someone who worked for Oprah Winfrey.
Go on.
And I said, oh, wow, she amazing. And she said, you know, she's not that all the time.
Ah.
She can turn it on and you feel like you're being bathed in the golden light from heaven.
Uh-huh.
She said, but you go to a party with Oprah.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like being at a wedding and talking to the bride,
yeah,
and she knows she's got to go and get round to her grandma at some point.
Yeah,
she's thinking, yeah, you're on a time limit. And I guess it's that. Everyone wants something from you.
Yeah.
And so you've got to keep a firm grasp on on your the amount of attention you give everyone.
It feels
cold.
That's LA.
Yeah.
I'm not an expert on LA, but I've worked there a couple of times.
Also, I guess people are pestering her all the time for things.
But nobody listens to anybody. The Americans and the Irish have got this in common. The Irish are never listening to you. They're never listening to anybody. They're just mentally rehearsing what they're going to say next.
They're performing.
Luckily, in the case of the Irish, it's interesting. So I get stuck when I'm in Ireland because I actually listen and laugh at the right places. But I'm the only one who is listening and laughing. Everybody else is thinking what they're going to say when it's their turn. And it's the same in America.
Mm.
You're absolutely right. Americans say things just for their own benefit. They're the only ones listening to themselves. So I don't think Oprah is necessarily a fish out of water in that regard in Los Angeles anyway.
Mm.
And this was a British friend of yours?
No, an American friend.
Oh, an American friend.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. She was kind of in the crew. She was making a TV programme for Oprah's channel.
Right.
And, she said, you know, when you were in favour, you knew it. But when time was of the essence, she made no bones about moving on to the next person.
Fair enough. Tell you who's lost weight, and that's Roseanne Barr.
Has she?
Yes.
She goes up and down, doesn't she?
Oh, she's bird-like now. But the voice is still there, that fantastic foghorn voice. An incredible sense of humour. We've got a little ways to go on the programme, if you can stick with us until 1 o'clock. I know there's cricket somewhere else, and people are talking about that. I know there's some rugby coming up at 4 in the morning. You forget all these things. is give us our last, give us your company for our last 20 minutes. And what do they used to say in radio? Give us 20 minutes and we'll show you the world. Was that those American news stations? We're up to number 8 on the list of the most interesting things. Ah, and at number 8 we have, and this is very pertinent to today, and we're not making light of something terrible yet, but at number 8 is Kim Jong-un.
The Tommy Boyd Radio Experiment.
Tommy Boyd on Talk Radio.
Just quickly, before we go back into this evening's format, if I flatter the content by suggesting it has a format, Steve Tampling has tweeted, fun fact, we were talking about television chefs a little bit earlier on, and he tweets, fun fact, Keith Floyd was in the SAS in the 1960s.
Oh.
No, he wasn't, Steve, but thanks.
It's an interesting thought.
I'd like to see some of those chefs in the SAS. I'd love to have seen... Who was the fellow with the spiky hairdo? Gary Rhodes.
Yes.
He wouldn't know. Russ in Birkenhead calls. Probably, Russ, you'll be signing off the phones for the evening, so let's have a good one. How are you?
Okay, hi, Tom. Yeah, fine, yeah.
Good.
Anyway, it's Birkenhead, not Birken. You're pronouncing it as though it's Birkenstead. Down your way.
Okay.
No problem. Yeah, anyway, I was just listening to it on another radio station, if you'll forgive me.
Sure.
And they were talking about the Sleeping Beauty controversy. And they were, you know, I think it's absolutely ridiculous that a fairy story should be made out to be, you know, a sort of... some people are trying to make it out to be a sexual thing. That's absolutely stupid.
Sleeping Beauty?
Yeah.
Sorry, which radio station was this?
Oh, 5 Live, yeah.
Okay. And they picked up on somebody saying that Sleeping Beauty is about something other than a princess who pricks her finger on a... sewing needle.
Well, the thing for 100 years, and it wakes up, you know, yes. Woken up by a prince.
It's not a sexual fairy story at all. It's about periods.
Is it?
It's about the menopause. Sleeping Beauty.
Really?
Yes.
I've not heard it in that context before.
Well, you only have to stop and think for a moment about the. About the symbolism in Sleeping Beauty?
100 years, though, Tom. That's the story, isn't it?
It's not literal, Russ.
I know.
It's not literal. Yeah. No, it's about a young girl who, as all young girls, considers herself a princess and her family consider her a princess. And she's confused and something happens to her one day and there is a drop of blood and it causes her all sorts of sadness and panic and she withdraws... utterly, until finally she finds true love, and in true love, which is the prince who gives her a kiss, and it's only a kiss, awakens her to her womanhood, and she lives happily ever after. There you are. That's it in a nutshell. I know what I'm talking about, because I've done Panto.
I don't think that's the right way to view it, Tom.
That's what it is, mate. It's not a question of right way or wrong way of viewing it. That's what it is. That's what all fairy stories are, metaphors for actual things that happen in life that cause fear in children. That's every fairy story there is. Give me a fairy story. I'll tell you what it really means.
Well, hang on a sec.
Do you want to know Snow White? Do you want to know what Snow White's all about?
No, but hang on a sec, Tom. Let's get back to
Cinderella. How about Cinderella?
That's what I found in.
I know, and I'm putting you right. All fairy stories are all about symbols of things that frighten children. Wrongly.
Yeah, I understand. I've heard that. Awesome.
Because it's true.
What I'm referring to is what the person on the other radio station was saying, was that originally it wasn't just the innocence of a sleeping beauty being awoken from 100 years sleep by a handsome prince. They said, or she said, I've forgotten the lady's name, but it was to do with someone being raped, you know, originally in the original story.
Quite conceivably, the original fairy stories were even more horrendous than the cleaned-up versions that have permeated their way...
over the years, yeah.
That have permeated, yeah. But look at... Well, I mentioned Snow White. I mean, look at Snow White. What do you think Snow White's all about?
Well, it seems a beautiful princess with her seven dwarves who attend to her, and they...
No, somebody tries to kill her. Who tries to kill her?
The Wicked Queen, is it not?
Who is what relation to her?
Stepmother?
Right.
Not sure.
And why does she try to kill her?
Because he's jealous of her, yeah?
Because of what?
The beauty of the...
Exactly. It's one of the greatest challenges that any mother has, discovering that her daughter has become more attractive to men than she is. That's what that is all about.
Is it her daughter or her stepdaughter?
In the version that has permeated its way onto the boards of theatres around the country from November the 28th until January the 17th, stepmother. Who knows what the original version was like? My own theory about the dwarves is that most women have to go through seven men before they find one they could actually settle down with. The first one's dopey, the second one's stupid, the second one smells, like that.
Yeah.
And don't get me started on Cinderella, because that is my absolute favourite, and we haven't got time to do it. But Jess, Russ, just goes to show what can happen if you listen to Radio 5 for too long. Thanks for your call, mate. Good lad. That's true, isn't it, Kath? Fairy stories are basically ways of acquainting children going back, 200 or 300 years.
It's warning them about life.
Giving them some sort of friendly way of acquainting themselves with some of the horrors of what it is to be an adult.
Well, they've got more friendly recently, haven't they?
What's that?
In the olden days, they were very, very frightening stories.
I would imagine they were, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But life was more frightening.
It was. It was. Or was it? It's Chilly Friday, and it's... Oh, sorry, it's a text for George Galloway. It's still coming through, which is fantastic. What are we up to here? We're up to which number of the world's most... Britain's most interesting things? I'm lost. Are we about to do a commercial break? No? OK, fine. Just asked Sam through the glass there. At number seven is man-made disasters. I don't want to dwell on them for too long, but it's always highly interesting to us. It draws our curiosity into a disaster, much the greater if it's man-made. If it's a hurricane or a tsunami, that is terrible. But if people, either in their fallibility or in their intent, are responsible for a disaster, 9/11, for example, it just consumes us, quite rightly, I think. And those things are always ongoing. At number six, list of most interesting things, is Brexit. And actually, it is more interesting than we realise, I think. Do you think?
I'm bored of it.
But it is still interesting.
I mean, the
minutiae of it is kind of tedious.
Well, it's just kind of, to me, it feels like we're a slow grind towards an inevitability.
But it's so enormous.
Yes.
And interesting. It is interesting. Look at the main characters and the Barniers and the Davises and the Boris and the Michael Goves and the Nigel. You know, what I say to people now who are mad keen leavers is, if you want a country that is run by a pompous twerp and that has capital punishment and still uses the imperial system, go and live in Alabama, because that's what they've got. But Brexit, how is it going to turn out? That's the thing. How's it going to turn out? You don't know, do you?
No, they don't either. That's the most frightening thing.
But it is, but it's interesting, isn't it? We are actually on this roller coaster. We are all on... Did you ever see the film Airplane?
Yes.
We're on that plane.
God.
Who is going to be our pilot?
It's like I picked the wrong day to give up anything.
There isn't a single line in that film that isn't perfectly funny. OK, we'll rattle through the last... We're up to number... Is that five or six? Five. Very quickly, then, at number four, weight loss. Is the number four most interesting thing for everybody in the UK today true?
I think so.
We'd all like to lose a few pounds, wouldn't we?
We all think our life would be so much different if we just looked a bit better, quote unquote.
But I don't think we'll ever lose. It's like the super rich. They've got 400 million, They want 500 yeah. million. You never know with weight loss.
Yeah, you never know when you're done.
You get down to 9'13". You want 9'11". Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, that's number four. At number three, and I think this is really true, especially now, and that is the news. The news, you just never know what's going to be next on the news at the moment.
No.
Which is not a good thing, but it does mean that we're more interested in the news and its digest than we have been for a long time.
I think so, because anything could happen. The most crazy scenarios are actually happening.
They are. It is pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Which leads us nicely on to, and I'm not going to do number one. Can you guess what's number one? Do you want to have a guess? You have a guess at home, or driving, or podcasting. Somebody's podcasting. This is the great thing about podcasts. Somebody will be listening to this, tragically, but will be listening to this a million years from now.
No.
Yeah, they will.
Oh, gosh.
Not necessarily this programme. Oh, hello, Tommy. I listened to your show from a million years ago. But, you know, it's around forever.
Mm.
So what do you think is going to be number one on this list of the most interesting things as far as the UK is concerned today? You have a punt in your own minds at Sam and Kath. Do you want a clue?
Yes.
No, I can't give you a clue because you get it straight away.
Do a mime.
Do a mime? Years ago, when this radio station was owned by a man who I both love enormously and hate enormously, called Kelvin McKenzie, he phoned me up and he said, "Well, you ought to do on your programme, young man," he said, "is get some jugglers on."
Well,
so I did. I got some jugglers on.
Were they better on the radio than in person?
For 10 minutes, all you heard was... hey! And we go... Then they go... So, that was me and Ash. So, the following week, we decided not to get the jugglers in, because I'd had to pay them 50 quid out of my own fee to come on. And we faked it.
Oh.
So it was me and Ash, just to keep Kelvin off our backs. It was me and Ash going... Ta-da! At number two is the royal family, and I think we can all accept that. You probably thought the royal family were going to be number one, because we're doing that thing that kind of you have an unexpected thing at number one. And you would have thought the royal family, wouldn't you?
Possibly.
Especially with Harry and Meghan.
Yeah, I'm more interested in the Queen.
And the Queen.
Mm.
And Philip. I'd like this question answered, but nobody can. Is there a bigger 96-year-old man alive in Britain today? Because normally 96-year-old men are the size of Snow White's friends.
Yes.
They're tiny. Men who get to 96 are usually really, really jockeys. But the Duke of Edinburgh is well known, is nearly 7 feet tall and 18 stone. How's he done that? Is it healthcare? Or...
Big houses, he's never had to crouch, has he?
Is he the undead? You don't know. No, of course he's not. At number one, and it's no surprise, really, and you didn't really need a clue, and you should have got it, because we haven't mentioned him at all, but the most interesting thing in the world at the moment is...
What, Trump?
Of course.
Ugh.
By a country mile. The other horses haven't got to the second last yet, and Trump is home and hosed as the most interesting thing in the world. Like him or loathe him, he's interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't he?
Yeah, you either like him or loathe him.
I don't know anybody who likes him, except that he makes the news more interesting. Mm. His tweets are fantastic.
But there's no one out there that thinks, oh, well, nah.
You can't go nah about Donald Trump. I mean, every time you see a documentary about what he's done
yes.
and how he's done it, and to whom and with whom, he's just...
He's just...
Fascinating.
The epitome of brass neck. And gets away with it.
Completely. Gets away with it. OK, we have enjoyed ourselves this evening. I do hope that listening to it you have as well. I have been... Jamie East, Roland Hound, and Ian Lee. Sam has been Sam, and Kath has been Kath. And until the next time, and I hope it's soon, good evening.